All right, so we'll get started. We'll call this meeting to order. The November Clark County Parks Advisory Board. This time we will let public comment go, or do we have anybody signed up? Or?
Yes, we have two.
Okay.
Signed up. Linda's first on that.
Oh, all right. Hi, Linda.
Hi, is this a good time?
Sure. No, no, this is your time, the public's time.
Hello, everyone. I'm Linda Lorenz. I spoke to you, I think, a couple months ago regarding the Moulton Falls Trail. You realize there's DNR owns a portion of what's on that trail, close to the Hantwick Trailhead. I guess you guys all had a field trip out there, which is great. So I was at the DNR board meeting this Tuesday, and we were discussing the Hantwick Trail. I would like to see it all move to Clark County. I think it would be an asset and have a continuation of what you own along the rest of that trail. And they were receptive. I was surprised. After I testified, they talked about the trust land transfer program. And they got to the portion where they were willing to give you guys the 200-foot buffer along the trail. And the comment of the boards was, well, how many acres is left? After the triangle that you guys own and the 200-foot buffer, how many acres is there really going to be left to cut? It's approximately 31 acres. So my recommendation was that why don't we put it all in trust land transfer and get it all into Clark County's hands? And they were very receptive. What they want to do is they're going to revisit this next month. At this point, I have a lawyer involved from the Forest Law Center, Washington Forest Law Center, and his recommendation to me was to get Clark County behind this movement, to have the Parks Advisory Board write a letter and say, we would love to have this piece of property part of our park system. You know, it's an asset to the people who use the trail. We appreciate it. We would love to take care of it. And we support this TLT transfer. So that's why I'm here today, is to possibly request that you guys create a letter just saying that, yes, we are recipients. We would love to be recipients of the whole parcel, all of Unit 1. 32 acres, in addition to the 200-foot buffer in the triangle, is not that much in what DNR owns and what they are cutting. So I don't really think it would be that large of a thing for them to say, yes, you just take this property and you retain it. So I'm hoping, that's what I'm here for, is hoping that I can get Clark County to make a voice, which I understand is what the advisory board's for. So that's my request. I had a map. So,
So here is the trail. The white line is the trail. This right here, this piece, is what they're going to be willing to give you already. It's already in this program, the Trust Land Transfer Program. This triangle is what Clark County already owns. So it's just this parcel and this parcel that DNR is in question of right now. We've had
a survey done
of this area.
Could you point the two parcels again?
Clark County owns this triangle.
Yes. Okay.
This is the 200-foot buffer. There's the trail. The white is the trail.
Okay.
The 200-foot buffer is this that they're willing to do already.
Okay.
It's already in the application process. It's already gone. So all we're talking about is the 32 acres of these two pieces.
Okay. That's
right. Right here is super steep cliff. They can't even cut it. It's 100-foot grade. I mean, it's just super steep. So roughly, I would say 28 acres is left. We've had a geological survey done. There are high erosion soils in this area. I just talked to Hunter Decker this morning, and we are in agreement that this is a potential landslide area. And since it's a trail, and since the train goes right through there, you know, we don't want to have public safety problems. With the landslide potential and the buffer leaving these alders here, it just increases it too, because we're going to have wind problems. These alders are all leaning on the trail. You guys probably all saw that when you took your hike. So having this gone, the wind is going to come and knock them all over. So there's many reasons why Clark County should take this piece. I would love to see it happen. I'm hoping you can join me in that. And I thank you for your time. If you have any questions.
Are you still planning to harvest above that?
Well, the Michigan Trotter is a 5-unit parcel, mm-hmm. and they have a couple other units here. Mm-hmm. We're only interested in unit one, this one. And this unit one is just because it's on the trail, highly visible, the train, the tourist train, right through there. We had a walk with DNR 3 weeks ago, and Randy Williams from the Chilhatchee Ferry Trail Road was with us, and he's like, I give the same speech every time we go through this area, you know, to the little kids that they're going to see Bigfoot up in these hills. And he said, it would be really hard to do that if there's a clear cut up there. So they're backing us too. And, you know, this is a scenic byway. You can see it from the road. And we have the East Fork of the Lewis River, which is a native salmon habitat. So we really just want to protect the whole area. And since Clark County owns all the rest of it and many pieces over here, it just makes sense that you guys take it.
Bill, would that be Columbia Land Trust that would take it then? Do you guys manage for fire fuel and stuff like this?
We do on some of our lands, yeah, through forestry practices.
Okay. Yeah,
so that's what the hunter practices is on. We haven't done anything up in this area at all.
Right.
Well, quite frankly, that area is not ours. It's under DNR control.
Sure.
So, but you know, if we did end up with that, we probably we would fit in like we would the Michigan Trotter. But you know, we might come in and do some just for forest health. You know, mm-hmm. just a little spot fitting like we do out at Camp Bonneville.
Okay.
So, but just you know, to manage for fire. But no, thank you, Linda.
It's a great potential for you guys. Mm-hmm. I would love to see it happen, but we're going to need some voice from Clark County saying that they want it. So, thank you.
Thank you.
So, Bill, how would we approach this?
I would. First thing I'd probably.
Or how do you want to approach it? Let me put it that way.
Well, the first thing I'd do is talk to Ahmad, who's my boss, about it. And we'd like to also talk to the county manager about that as well. And get a consensus or an idea of how we should proceed on this. And,
yeah.
It does have slight potential. I don't know if it's slight potential just the way it sits right now. That is a consideration. Have advocated that we do want that trail. It's in DNR holding right now. We do want that trail, so we know that it's going to be ours in perpetuity. And so, as well as you know, the
buffer
at least.
But
it seems like a reasonable option to me to look at that broad piece of section one there. I would have been really concerned that if we're asking for the entire area all the way to the top of the hill, the entire parcel, I think that would have been probably too much. But I think what Linda's proposing is fairly reasonable, but we need to talk about that. So.
It pretty much is that entire parcel. It is the whole unit one. Mm-hmm. The complete unit one is what we're asking.
Right.
What's the boundary on that unit one condition?
Yes, unit one is this
lightly shaded area.
Right. It's all of unit one.
So we're not advocating for all of this up here.
No, this is all DNR land.
Right.
And so we have nothing to do. This goes to the top of the hill, though. From this area, you can only see to here.
Right.
Over here, you really can't see this because the top of the hill is here.
Yeah, okay. My biggest concern was if we were talking about taking all of this, because that would be good.
No.
I trust that country, that was more difficult to acquire that much land because that has a significant dollar value to it.
Oh, definitely.
And the legislature would be probably less apt to give us all that land. So
it's just this unit one, just this area that I am trying to work for, because the 200-foot buffer is pretty much a done deal, or as far as it's in that application process now, it has to go to legislation. But I would like to see this also go part of legislation, which means I'll go lobby and try to get it passed. Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting that this is yours already, this triangle.
Mm-hmm.
It was given by Washington State Funds for Recreation.
Mm-hmm.
So someone in Foresight said that this is a recreation area. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we're giving you the money for that.
This piece and this piece of we were tied together on the same acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought this through grant funding. So with this piece is all grant encumbered. DNR's got grant encumbered property here as well. So our original task was to do a potential trade. So that was this area for this area, because they wanted to, they can't really log over this and skip this. They wanted this piece originally. That's when they approached us back in 2017. So we talked to RCO, Recreation Conservation Office up in Olympia, regarding this trade, and they said it's going to take 2 years to make this trade happen because it's grant encumbered, and so it would be a grant conversion, and it would have been totally problematic. They said that don't even try it, for the most part. So that's when we entered into the possibility of trust land transfers, and so of course you've been involved with that, and so thank you for your lobbying on that. And so that's our next step, is to find out. So I'm talking to Kevin, he's not here today, he's out of town, but I believe we're going to hear more back. He said probably around February of 2019. That's what I heard from him. So.
I just talked to Kevin a couple days ago, mm-hmm. and the timeline has moved up just because on December, the first Tuesday in December, DNR board is going to decide whether they're going to put all of it in trust land transfer.
Okay, great.
So if we can hear, Clark County can let them know, you know, we're willing to take it. We'd love to take it. This is a great recreational jewel for us. That would be good before that time.
What was the date again?
The first Tuesday of the month in December is when the DNR board meeting, and I will be there to testify again. And if you do send a letter, if you could CC me on it, that would be great, just because then I can present it and say, hey, I've got, you know, the backing of Clark County. Yeah. This would be a great thing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Apparently it is.
Yeah, as we look at this, Bill, as I recall, open spaces like that really don't have a huge financial commitment behind them, right?
Right, typically not. Unless they
so preservation of it would not create a huge burden. Because it's adjacent to lands we're already going and visiting.
Right.
Okay.
And I don't see any residential around it immediately. So, yeah. And you've got the trail down below, you've got the railroad below. Yeah. Those are two components.
I think Bill and I would just do a field visit and do to make sure there's any potential risk or anything like that.
Right.
Okay. Or potential maintenance. And then, but I'm sure if the meeting is on December 3, and the next board meeting is
the 12th.
So
it'll be December. DNR's 10th.
Yeah, we would
right.
have to do it from this meeting. Yeah,
so
the letter would have to be.
To
so maybe add it to new business for today. We could attend the.
Well, we can
agenda.
Put it in the new business, I think we should further discuss.
Yeah.
And then maybe we can give you guys the latitude that if it's a positive, you feel like it's a positive for the parks, then. Mm-hmm. You know, reach out to DNR and say it, and you know, make a positive statement toward that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling there's some more things you have to hassle through before
yeah.
or anything.
There's the unknown.
Official.
Yeah.
Right.
There's the
but
unknown.
And what Linda's looking for is a positive statement to DNR to, you know, I guess hold them
supportive
from doing it.
Supportive from the county.
Of that
right.
From county.
Right.
So okay, we'll discuss it during the. New business in a little bit and try to we'll try to work hard to have a positive outcome on that.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks. Okay, another person from, and I cannot read your name, I apologize.
Oh, it's Anita Will.
Oh, okay.
And I got involved with, as Linda said, is trying to get the trail down below to help out with the Daybreak Park area. And they haven't adopted the park yet, but they are aiming for it, so they just let you know. So.
Okay.
Great.
Thank
great.
You for the update.
Volunteers.
We've had somebody here basically the last three or four meetings, I believe.
Yeah.
They're
still working on everything.
Okay. Good.
And then, sir, you came in a little later. Do you want to speak, or?
Oh, that's not.
Oh, sorry.
That's Doug Keller.
He's
our maintenance superintendent.
All right. Sorry about that. And, that's why you didn't sign that?
You don't know all the employees.
I don't know all the employees. No, and I apologize for that. That's bad on my part.
Yeah.
My bad. So, all right. So we've gone through the public comment. Thank you for that. And then why don't we go through a roll call? And Bill, we'll start with you.
Bill Berkey, Parks Manager, President.
Laura Hoggett.
She's in the who am I?
Yeah, I can be back quick. Can't remember my
overwhelmed
name.
Overwhelmed. It's hard to support Bill.
I'm Sybil Crow, director on Parks Foundation.
Barbara Anderson, PAB.
Kelsey Potter, PAB.
Jay Chester, PAB.
Dave Weston, PAB.
Kevin Papp, PAB.
Is Kelly on the...
No.
He's not on the phone. Okay.
No.
All right.
So one... First time this year that I am getting ready to reach in.
And I'm up in the public works director.
Thank you. Staff.
All right. You want to have the folks in the back identify it?
Go ahead. So Michael Brinson, the East Charles Community Attorney.
Eric Christensen, Parks.
Doug Geller, Parks.
Who I met today. All right. Linda sent out the minutes earlier and from our last meeting, and I looked over them and didn't have any changes. So anybody have any changes or anything to the last month's meeting minutes? If not, can I have a motion to accept?
I'll make the motion to accept.
All right.
Second.
It's been seconded. So it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. And then volunteer hours for PAB, I need to get with Laura and get mine. I've written it all down. I just haven't had a chance to. I can't seem to get into the website to submit it electronically. So.
We need to bring a stick and spank us.
I know.
Oh, I just provide tools if you need them.
Oh, you don't do the motivation.
Can I just hand this to her? So now I get to say, you guys really need to turn in your hours. Mine was only for the last 3 months.
I know. Every time I leave and I say I'm going to do it, and then I get busy, and it's like, am I going to
totally understand.
Do this, or am I going to,
Totally understand.
I know you do.
The only reason I got a chance to do that was because my wife was sick, and I had to sit with her for 24 hours. So anyway, she's fine. Yes, ma'am. Anything else?
So Linda had requested that if we could do the field trip PowerPoint while she was here.
Okay, sure.
Is that still okay?
We can adjust the agenda, of course. We're a flexible group. We can do that. So that was in the, where are we?
It's L in unfinished business.
Mulberry Falls update. Bill, you want to lead us through that?
Sure, absolutely. So we basically got on with a van tour, came in through Hedwig Trailhead. We actually drove the van basically all the way up to the Multon Falls Arch Bridge, but we stopped in the area of question right here that Lynn was talking about earlier and took a look at the flagging up the hill, and didn't really see a lot of flags up there. We kind of visually looked at what that would look like had it been, say, the harvested from that visual line going up the hill. And so we talked, Hunter Decker was there, talked about that, what that would look like. We talked about forest health and the management. What else did we talk about on there? I'm trying to remember. There's a few things that Hunter talked about. He basically just kind of gave an overview, talked about forests, and then what our plan was kind of going forward. So that's kind of what we talked about today. So trust land transfer. And then from there, we didn't spend a lot of time on it, but we just kind of went up to the bridge. So you go click onto the next. There's Hunter. So we had him in the parking lot. So this is a trail midway up that takes you up to Coal Creek Campground, Tarbell Trail, Rock Creek Campground, Silver Star. So this split that goes up takes you to all these different sites. We pointed that out. So we did the 200-foot buffer from the flagging that we could see up on the hillside. And so basically the idea was to preserve the view shed from the trail and from the rail. So it was really difficult to see any of the flagging. We could kind of see one here and there, but For the most part, we're just going to sit there and kind of visualize what that tuner sort of whatever it looked like, and we'll go up from there. So a tree mark in blue. So that was a tree that was actually right along the trail itself, and we asked the question, hey, what's this line here? That means it would be left behind. So then we made it up to the bridge where we've seen a whole bunch of people, there's probably 30 people from a filming crew that's going to be doing a movie shoot coming in December. So we have Barbara Anderson is there, Mulata, John Spencer, Sybil, myself, Hunter, and Laura. Yep. So this is the filming crew that was down here. They were kind of going all over the place. So we're looking down from the bridge at this point. This is where they're going to jump off in the movie and here into the water. A lot of pointed out the cave. Actually, took a picture of that. This is the name of the movie, in case you're interested in the future. So it's going to be called The Librarians.
Well, they have a thing on TV. It's a TV series.
Go back to it real quick. Oh. So paranormal is their normal. So they're going to do a shoot up there in
December.
Well, he was trying to hide it because, you know, his jacket said The Librarians.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, well, we don't know what the movie is going to be called yet.
Hey, Eric, is the permit for December 9th? Is that right?
I think it's for November 26th.
On November 26th, so this month? Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. So that's when they're going to be up there doing their shoot?
For the death? Having to jump in the water.
Yeah.
So of course, they see us wrapping up the Hanway Trail, and they said, hey, can we use this trail also? No. it's such a picturesque area. It's such a beautiful. I can see where people would want to come in and you know, use this for movies. So, all right. There's John.
I'm just snapping my pictures off of Facebook, huh? That's good.
That's the cave that's under the bridge there. So, all right. So that was it, pretty much. And just wanted to be able to see what a lot of our members here haven't really seen that trail, what that looks like from there, and how beautiful it is up there. So, and Ahmad and myself and our county manager, Sean Hennessy, were up there just a couple weeks earlier looking at the signage on the bridge, you know, about no jumping, no diving, we agreed that we're going to put some additional signs on the bridge approaches, so when people walk up to the bridge from either way, they'll know that the county is, you know, serious about their health and that they shouldn't be jumping or diving off that 53-foot tall bridge.
This is where
you
the girl
should just
was
put,
pushed.
Have you seen that video?
Yeah.
That should be the only message you need to put on there. Yeah. That would scare people more than no jumping.
Put the video and then give her medical condition when they wheeled her into the hospital.
Here's the link to the video. Someone who did jump
and all
of her medical issues.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, probably made the right decision because whatever measures we put in place with fencing and everything,
people are still
going to
find a way.
Yeah. They're going to find a way to go over, around, or on top.
Sometimes it becomes an enticement when you put a fence up.
It's a challenge. Yeah.
So, well, actually, you know, that Facebook post I did from that got, I think, the most hits we've had since the party thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, 320.
Oh, views or yeah, that's great.
Yeah, 326. I think it was last time I looked. So it's stuff like that, folks. Keep it in mind. Mm-hmm. Let Kelsey or I know, and send us pictures, and we'll put them up because we want to have a reason for people to come visit us.
Yeah.
And
so it was a very good field trip, and gave us a chance to really look at the beauty of along the trail, and you know why we should be preserving that. So that's good. So thank you for attending.
That's great.
All right. Okay. All right. So then we'll go back to unfinished business. The PIF balance.
So PIF balances. So what you're looking at here in front of you is a in the sheet there is a 2-month look. And so if you can see that we're still bringing the monies in. So a lot of development's happening. Just in the last 2 months, you can see in PIF 5. So PIF 1, as you well know, is fairly well inactive. We own such a small portion, about 98.5% of it is in the city of Vancouver. So there's really nothing left that's buildable, so we basically just need to expend what's left. I was thinking about actually handing what's left over to the city of Vancouver so they can utilize it for their waterfront project or whatever they however they want to utilize it, because we really don't have a place to spend this money. And after 10 years, you know, we stand a chance of losing it. We'd have to refund it back. So I talked to Julie Hammond about her interest in that. She said, sure, we'll take it.
It's
not a lot of money, you know, it's not a lot, but I would like to see it be put to great use for parks rather than going back. In 5th District 5, as you can see down below, the combined fund, we gained $214,000. Very good to see this. As you well know, we've got a couple things going on in 5th District 5. We are buying the Anderson property. That's in 5th District 5. So if you look up at the top in the acquisition, we have $897,000. That goes towards that acquisition. And then we're also going to use the combined fund to purchase the remainder amount. It's $1.8 million. That's the acquisition amount altogether. We're also going to make enhancements to Hopkinson Community Park by adding the disc golf course and the two bridge crossings and the shelter. And so the one thing I was worried about, this Otto Brown was also constructed out of this money too. All those funds have been cleared now, so I think we've got enough money to do both, so we can actually move into that acquisition. We'll probably do it in January, just to make sure we've got the funding. And then the permitting for the disc golf course should be done somewhere around June or July with the grisses. And so we can actually start construction on those thereafter. So.
Is that 18 hole?
What's that?
18 hole or not?
18 hole. 18, yeah, okay. 18 hole. With a trailer run.
Primarily going to be done by those volunteers, right?
The golf course itself will be done by volunteers. Of course, the bridges and the shelters and all that will be done.
You don't want volunteers to build bridges, though? Come on, live a little.
No, we're volunteers. So we've got the baskets already.
Okay.
And the trails in between are like chip trails. And so yeah. The volunteers will have a huge role. And the runways, so where you actually throw the disc golf. The disc will be all done by volunteers as well.
Awesome. I think we should, after that's done, write them a letter or, I don't know, have them here to thank them or something.
Absolutely.
That's a lot of work.
And publicize it to try
to
get more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take a tour with them.
I take a lot of calls from these guys. They're anxious and waiting. They've been waiting for about a year and a half to get started on this.
Right.
So,
yeah.
All right. So my fault. I kept expanding the scope of the project. And so. But it, you know, it was a type 2 project. We want to make sure we crammed everything in there that we needed to, so it wouldn't be left out. So it made sense to do that in a timely fashion. Okay, and then of course in PIP 6, looks like we had $128,000 that came in. PIP 7, 363, so pretty docile right now. PIP 8, $184,645, so very active. That one, our next project in PIP 8 is Pleasant Valley, so that will be our last community park within the promised 35 parks. And so depending on what we anticipate putting into that site, right now we've got a bridge crossing over Salmon Creek that actually ties into the WSU trail. They can actually walk from this from Pleasant Valley over to WSU campus. And so our improvements are going to be the top plateau of that property up there next to Pleasant Valley School. Mm-hmm. The one thing that we've got is a 5-acre property that abuts school property. It's dead flat, and it'd probably make a perfect soccer field for the elementary school or baseball fields. So we might look at a sports enhancement as a part of that. So if that's the case, we'll probably need a few more bucks in here. But right now we've got $2.4 million, and it looks like that fund is going to be up to about $3 million by the end of this next year, I would predict. PIP 9, $19,540, and PIP 10 is actually waking up. So we've got $83,738. If you recall back in the 2016 year, we brought $0 in the entire year. So development of PIP 10, that's the 179th Street interchange area all around Buckney Fairgrounds. That is starting to really take off. So I'm really, really pleased at the funds that are coming in. So it allows us to go out and actually start developing, you know, doing more acquisitions, which is the freedom to move. So, very good.
Not much money.
So just so you know, right now, our next two projects in line, Kirk Creek Community Park, that's in 5th District 6, and also Cozy Camp, and that's in 5th District 10, Those are the two that are going to be constructed, and we anticipate that happening in 2020. Both of them are being planned right now. So, all right. That's it.
Okay. All right. Lewis and Clark Trail update. You want to say anything else or
no? I'm
just observing.
Nice long weekend.
He's got about 4 minutes going on.
Oh no, I know. I totally understand. I just didn't want to, you know.
Thank you.
Wanted to take up. I didn't want you to walk away.
Thanks for stopping by.
Walk away mad. Just
take care. Okay, so we have
meeting
with our stakeholders. Up in Ridgefield, and our task from Dan Miller and Brian Pruden was to chart out our three preferences on trail alignments. Right, Laura?
Yes.
That's our task. And so we, as I think the due date was is today, right?
Yes.
We actually turned our preferences in yesterday based on what we had talked about. So we got together, took a hard look at what our preferences are, have been. And so, number one, we only gave three preferences. I think we could have given more, but number one was to is the yellow alignment right here. That is to put the yellow trail completely around Vancouver Lake, making that loop, making the connection to Burbridge Creek, making the connection to Selassie Trail. Both those connections are on this side of the lake, so it's absolutely paramount that we get over to that on this side. So, City of Vancouver. On the south side is very active in making their connection. They're actually looking at the overpass on Fruit Valley Road to get that that bridge overpass replaced in order to make a great trail connection across from Burbridge Creek over to Vancouver Lake. And so in addition to the loop trail, staying on the washdot alignment all the way up into the National Wildlife property where we have the National Wildlife Refuge bridge crossing over onto the Ridgefield property, which is going to be a trailhead. So, and then from there, we would probably take a lower alignment and come right into the city of Ridgefield. The one thing about this area right here is it's very steep, and so it has to be a trailhead that you can drive to. And once you get there, all this is pretty well dead flat. So our problem is that we've got differing views from the National Wildlife Refuge. They do not want us on that property at all costs.
Yeah.
And this is drive only. So this is called the S River unit, all the way down to in here is a refuge. And they have the Carney unit, which is where the Plank House is at. It's on the other side of Ridgefield, out that way. People can walk all over all they want. Unfortunately, it's not in the alignment that we're looking for to put the trail on. So we're working on them pretty hard. They themselves are actually producing their own alignments as well, their preferences. And so we're not saying that it can't be done. It's just that it's going to be a pretty serious uphill battle to get that alignment put through. We're going to go to Olympia and talk to the bigs because it's national property. So, option number two is the Orange Trail. Still a little around the lake, but we come up and and cross over here into Flume Creek property. So we're avoiding the lion's share of the wildlife refuge. We still are on it just a little bit. In fact, right here is still wildlife refuge property down here. But we're not on it as much as we are in this big section. So we would cross over here, come up, and this is actually private property. And talking to Pat Lee, we're talking about talking to the Roth family who owns this piece here and seeing if we can negotiate the possibility of putting trail alignment on there. What's nice is we also have
more of the top part. Just zoom in the top part, you feel a little more towards it. It looks like everything, yeah, kind of where it builds. Yeah. Thank you.
There you go. So cross over here. And then this private property piece right here, crossing over to Plume Creek. This is county owned, and it abuts the city of Richfield. There's actually a undercrossing here under the Burlington Northern Santa Fe line. So that's already in place on the Plume Creek, which we already own, which is good news.
Yeah.
Because trying to get a crossing either over or under is probably a decade or more in the making.
Yeah.
So if we can do that. Then we follow that same alignment straight up to this trailhead here and then into the city of Richfield. So our third choice is the purple line. And let's go back down just a little ways. So I don't think that this one shows the update. We still want the loop around Vancouver Lake, because if we don't have a loop that ties us into Burnbridge Creek, what are we doing? You know, it's got to make sense. And so another critical link here is the Palina. We want to connect this entire neighborhood into this trail system. Right now, the only way to get here is from downtown Vancouver. You can't get there from anywhere else. So so this is a critical trailhead or trail link that gets you onto this trail system from Palina. So we want to make sure that we preserve this loop.
So would that need a bridge, Bill?
Yes, two bridges. Yeah. One across Lake River and one across Buckmeyer Slough.
Well, and I know from talking to my mother-in-law, who was trying to make that happen years ago, she said there's so much opposition to building a bridge there. Something about boats being able to get under it, but certain height restrictions. Like, it's not going to be an easy bridge.
Yeah, so Lake River is navigable, so it has to be a certain height.
Yeah.
So it'd be the same height that is going in on the wildlife refuge bridge. They're replacing that bridge out.
Which is
taller than it is now. It has to be a certain height. This would be the same thing.
Wow.
So it's high.
It's high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's up there ways.
Okay.
And so if you go up to the Cardi unit, mm-hmm. which is north of Richfield, which is that Reading Bridge that went in, you're looking at something like that. It's beautiful, but it's going to be expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why do we need two?
Because you have to bottom the water.
Otherwise you can't connect.
Here's the main channel for Lake River. Here's Buckmeyer Slough.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Trail.
Yep, so, yep. Okay.
So we have a bridge here, but this is just an open culvert. We just need to put a bridge in here. This one does not have to be all that tall because it's navigable for kayaks.
Okay.
It's not for big boats or anything like that. So the big difference in this one is this is Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife land right in here. It's called, commonly known as the Shillaboo Unit, and that's hunting grounds, duck hunting grounds. And that is a recreational component that they are clinging to. They keep it really close to the chest. They don't want that to be messed with. What they would prefer us to do is skip this area. It's also a rookery for cranes.
Sandhill.
Sandhill cranes or and herons, I guess. We have a rookery over here for herons along Frenchman's Bar. But there's supposed to be a rookery in here. So they prefer that we stay on this existing alignment. There's Vancouver Lake Park, Frenchman's Bar. We already have a trail that comes up here and stops here at Frenchman's Bar. They would actually like us to keep this going and back up. I'm going to scroll up a little bit here. Okay. And skip this whole area right here so that they preserve that rookery and preserve the hunting grounds for the hunters. It's doable, yeah. Once you get to the end of Lower River Road, there's a dike that is elevated. And it goes all the way back over here. So it's actually very, very doable, if you will. Problem is that our connection to, once you go back up again a little bit, I'm sorry. It kind of affects our folks from the light of this connection. So what they're gonna have to do is go all the way down.
Yeah.
Let me zoom out.
That's not flying.
You wanna be down at the lake.
You wanna go
down here. I'm sorry. Yeah. So our folks from Palina will have to come down and around to go north. So if you can't get here from there,
yeah.
You got to go down and around. So it's okay. It's kind of an inconvenience.
But is that salmon restoration project happens, couldn't that like ruin those hunting grounds, right? Isn't that what the issues were if they did something with the water?
No, so it
it'll still be huntable.
It'll still be huntable.
It's just, it might be prone to more flooding or more dry conditions. So it may not be as wet or maybe too wet.
Because I was going to say, we don't have any control over that project. No. So if that were to happen and you can't hunt there anyways, then we might as well put the trail, you know, they wouldn't be as upset about us putting a trail through there. But if it's still going to be huntable, then...
So, yeah, and there's also the possibility of trails closed during hunt season. So there's nobody out there. The hunters are going to use the trail to get out there deeper into the lands without getting wet and all that stuff.
Are we going to have those issues going by the wildlife refuge at all, still, in either of these alignments, going having closures due to hunting?
I am curious how it's going to be, because right now people hunt Lake River. And when you put a trail along Lake River, I mean, Lackamas Creek's an example, you know, we used to hunt it. Now it's a park. You know? And I mean, as much as I like trails, there is far less huntable area around here locally than
that's
trails.
True. Yeah, it does. It doesn't. And I mean, we'd have to have some kind of shared agreement to where, you know, what's the hunt season?
Basically September through end of the year, January.
Okay, so. Basically, the fall and the
fall.
Beginning of winter. So that's a possibility of sharing or having odd even or something. I don't know. That's something to think about. But let's go up north here. So this would be the other alignment along the Columbia River, and then kind of going around, coming up and using a crossing here at the very southern end of the National Wildlife Refuge. So we're staying off of it altogether. Coming up. And then following up and going all the way up through this private property and into, let's go a little bit further north. And coming all the way up into Flume Creek and out that way. It's going to be probably the most difficult challenge to see all these little parcels that we'd have to hit that distance from. So it's not going to be an easy task for us.
That railroad underpass, though, is huge.
It is. It's huge.
And it would make Plume Creek or whatever used.
So if we have the ability to stay down low, we can use this railroad underpass to get into the property, but and stay down low, that would be great because Plume Creek is highly treacherous. There's like three creeks that run into it or two creeks that run into it, so you have these big peaks and valleys and stuff, and AV accessibility is just not going to happen without huge switchbacks. I mean, it's going to take the entire property to make it navigable for all abilities.
That was something I was curious about in your Vancouver Lake Loop. From about Christmas through April, most of that east shore is underwater up to the railroad. So I was just curious how that's going to happen.
So the possibility, we talked about this on more than one occasion, is to have a floating trail.
Okay.
As long as it's not miles long. There's great examples up in around Seattle where they had actually a floating trail around the entire lakes.
Right.
And it's really cool. It is. In fact, I wouldn't actually mind seeing a floating trail as a part of this, whether we need it or not, just to have that experience.
Right.
So there's a good possibility here along Lake River. So if we can probably the right shoreline of Lake River going north, where
there you go.
We've got erosion going to Santa Fe that actually drops right from there, shoulder right into the river.
Yeah.
We could probably have a floating trail right there. So maybe if it's half mile long, 3/4 mile long, it's doable. It's going to be expensive, but it's, you know, it's, if we get the philanthropists out there to buy into this, so be it. So that's our three choices that we sent in to Dan, and all the folks that were at the meeting are doing the same exercise. So it would be curious or interesting to see what the end result is going to be, you know, what their preference is going to look like. Because this is what Dan's going to use to do the final mapping on this for the National Park Service. So that's that.
Okay.
Fingers crossed, we'll probably convene another meeting in the time to find out what the news will be.
I feel like we made a lot of progress on this, though.
We did.
Compared to a few months ago, I mean, it almost looked dead.
Yeah, so. I know. It's scary. And so I'm talking to Nicole Komunsky, you know, she's with Fish and Wildlife, and she's really trying to push this ahead. She really wants to know if we want to take that washed out right away over. And they are still very interested in giving it to us, but how much of it are we going to use is the question.
Yeah.
So based on what the determination is here. So.
What's the timeline for them to get back to to you? Who are we waiting for? The Wildlife Refuge, essentially? Who's approving this? Who are we waiting for?
It's actually all of our different suggestions are due today.
Okay.
And so Dan and Brianna are going to take all the suggestions and come up with a preferred route.
Okay.
From this. So I would say Dan's probably going to have it for probably 6 more weeks before they come back with an actual preferred route on the trail system for this.
Okay.
So this is probably the most contentious of the entire 50 miles is right here. So which just happens to be in the area that I've got some control over. So the rest is all in cities. So we'll see where this goes. And I'm curious. I would like to get started on this sooner than later. So once we do find out, I would like to start making some strong efforts to make our ties into the flight.
Through the connect points.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. The next item up is the park codes review.
I have one question for you.
Yeah.
The marina, is that county or private?
What's the marina?
The Lida.
That is DNR owned.
Okay.
And it is leased out to a private holder or a private carrier that has houseboats down there.
Right.
So, but it'll,
so it'll, that's where that trailhead would be?
No, the trailhead would actually be on our property.
Oh, okay.
It's on conservation lands, legacy lands, at Manages. So we own that. Yeah. We'd have to go across the DNR. There's only one road down there, and there's steep. That's how we get the trailhead there, so you can drive to it.
Okay.
But there'll be a restroom there, and it's very
good. All right, so I assume this is an update on our ongoing effort update our park rules code. And,
oh, he even brought a laser light pointer.
I did.
He's ready.
It'll keep me, hopefully keep me on point here. So 9.05, it's our park rules, park code section. We've been to a couple of times now. The previous time you had a couple of times you had some recommendations and changes. So what you have in front of you and what's up here is a markup version. So it's the final markups. So you can see what the original or what the existing code section is, and then what were the changes. So as far as updates and changes, there are basically two varieties of changes that we've gone through and made. First type of change is housekeeping. So a lot of this, what you'll see is there are changes to what was formed the Board of County Commissioners. So commissioners, we've updated that. We've updated director to Parks and Lands Manager. And there are some division department updates and then a Fish and Wildlife update. There's a board of some sort with Fish and Wildlife that no longer exists. So we, in talking to Fish and Wildlife, they just said, hey, change that, please. So that's those are the first types of changes. The second type of changes are what we've kind of already talked about as far as adapting to current trends and some uses and challenges. If you want to go to 9.05.060, that is the section on animals and birds. So just again, some feedback about changing this from 8.15.020 to just simply 8.15 because it broadens, kind of covers a broader section of basically the off-leash law is where all this is. So basically what this says is you can't allow your animal or dog essentially to run off-leash except as outlined or spelled out in 8.15. And 8.15 goes into off-leash areas and specifically describes when and how and where you can allow an animal to be off the leash.
Right.
And then, as I mentioned, the Fish and Wildlife change is here in 1C. That's a more or less housekeeping. We had some conversation. Jeremy, could you scroll back to 010? We had some conversation about. Scroll down up a little or down. There you go. This is in the definitions. This very last line in the definition under power-driven mobility device. There's some conversation or discussion about scratching this last line. I won't bore you with what all this entails, but if you do want to read it, if we eliminate this last section, I think it actually makes it confusing. It almost feels like it probably does need to be in there just to help finish the thought or the definition for this power-driven mobility device.
it seems like you would need it just because a lot of our trails are not necessarily defined, I would think.
So the thought, the discussion was around, or the thought was
define.
Eliminating that last line would broaden this last portion or broaden the definition as a whole. But as I've been through it, after kind of scratching that out and read it a couple of times, it seems like it makes it maybe more confusing and not as broad. The intent is to make it broader, and I think it actually doesn't do that. So that was another kind of content change we had talked about and went in through and made. And then if we scroll down to 9.05.080, that's swim year.
I'll look at it. Go ahead.
Yeah, we can pause. Is there a question?
That's okay. I'll read it by myself. Go ahead.
Okay.
080?
Yeah, 080.
Okay, that's the wrong question. Yeah.
So the board had a discussion about swim diapers, right? And allowing them, prohibiting them. So one of the things I did, I added this section, so where it reads, okay, it's unlawful to do all these things, and then it says, okay, it's unlawful to wear swim diapers while doing these activities and times at places that are posted as restricted. When I wrote this, I think now reading back to this, I think it's a little confusing, and I can clarify this. The intent is to say you can't have a swim. You should be potty trained.
Yes.
And not be wearing a swim diaper in places where it's posted as restricted. Okay. So I can clean that up. I think I have to go back and clean that up. I also contacted or reached out to public health because they come out and they obviously right. test and inspect the water. They test and inspect the splash pad and check the restrooms for a number of things. They came back to me with a recommendation, and it's in front of you.
Yeah.
They recommend that individuals who are not toilet trained stay out of the water at swim beaches, regardless of whether swim diapers are warm. Mm-hmm. Swim diapers are not required to be worn, or it's not regulated in public beaches, but they do recommend that if we could put signs. And then it's up to us to enforce the signs. So that can be done. What I will add to that is the splash pad is actually, you're required by law to wear a form-fitting, like a tight, a swim diaper type-fitting plastic kind of cover. So what that then presents is we have to enforce both. So it could present a confusing opportunity or some conflict at the park. If we have lifeguards saying, well, you cannot wear a swim diaper in the water, but you have to wear one at the splash pad.
I don't like
you have to be potty trained.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of saying you can't wear a swim diaper.
Correct.
Then they just do something else.
Yeah.
Right.
But the whole you can't.
You don't discourage people from taking children in the water.
No, we don't want to do that, right?
That's what we don't want to do that.
Right. Exactly.
So you have to be potty trained to access like climb lines
the
with water.
The water.
But your unpotty trained children can use the splash pad if wearing a swim diaper.
Exactly.
And a protective cover.
Right.
Whatever.
The intent of a splash pad, a climb line, was to get the kids out of the pond.
Right.
And
to
give them the ability to play in water as well.
So just kind of circling back to this, you'll read this and you'll probably say, what in the world
does
that,
confusing.
Could that be written better? The answer is yes. so we can, I can clean that up and it probably just needs to say something along the lines of you have to be toilet trained, right?
Yeah.
Or it's unlawful to not be toilet trained or something. It has to be cleaned up a little bit.
It's against the law to not be toilet trained. So get on it.
Well, the point is, ultimately the point is we can post signs that say you have to be potty trained to go into the water.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And so. I think this should go over all the people, right? More people may use that space.
Except for I will tell you little boys about 5 or 6 out there will say, pee, hee, hee, I pee in the water.
Well, pee is sterile. It's the...
It is.
It's the... That's what my pediatrician says.
Okay. Yeah. It's the other, though.
It's the other. I hope they don't.
I heard told Hayden that wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And he laughed.
All you're doing is
boys
giving them
a green
light to go to.
Yeah. So is this something, are we going to put these up like at Louisville and Frenchman? like near watering holes?
No, basically, where's most of the work is going to be at Klein Lund, where there's an isolated body of water that can't flush itself.
Or Vancouver Lake.
And Klein Lund would be the two sites.
Okay,
yeah,
that would be good.
Where the rest is on, you know, you've got
the deer already.
Well, you have the sewer overflows from the Willamette anyways going down the Columbia, so it's not going to, poopy diapers not going to help that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So I wouldn't suggest that we have it anywhere else.
Those two places.
Two sites where the water's just not able to clean itself.
Yeah. Okay.
All it takes is just one dirty diaper and we shut the entire operation.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just
horrific.
Well, thanks, Eric, for working on that.
Oh, there's more.
Oh, good.
There are 9.05.110. There's some language keep going. We just added, it was recommended or asked if we could clarify this, just or add harass or fail to yield. So it's unlawful for the driver of any vehicle to harass or fail to yield the right of way to any person riding a horse on paths designated for or permitting equestrian use. It kind of, I guess it spells it out a little bit or maybe clarifies a little bit better. Rather than just reading vehicle to yield, maybe it just kind of clarifies harass or fail to yield. So.
Eric, a couple questions.
Sure.
Number one, this is probably just a small thing. Definition of harassment, is that critical for an enforcement purpose here? Because my definition of harassment might be different.
You know,
and what constitutes harassment?
We do have a definition section for the code. We could probably put that in there.
I don't think it's in there.
We could add it.
Right, it's not in there.
Okay.
It would have to be added, or we would just... Right, it would have to be added. It would probably need to be added if that's in there.
Yeah.
Okay. And under power-driven mobility device, is that intended to be for any user or just for limited mobility purposes?
We wouldn't restrict. A person with a disability would certainly be able to use it, but we wouldn't restrict it to a person without a disability necessarily, as long as they're operating it in a safe manner.
Because maybe I'm nitpicking again here, but it's when I read down through that, power-driven mobility device, any mobility device powered by batteries, fuel, or other engines, whether or not designed primarily for use by individuals with mobility disabilities, that are used by individuals with mobility disabilities.
Right. So you're saying you can drive a golf cart through the park if you're doing it safely?
Well, you're saying any user. This is mobility, power-driven mobility device is for if I wanted to ride those little Razor scooters that they have through downtown Portland, but I'm not limited mobility. Any restriction about power-driven mobility devices would apply to me.
This isn't the rule, right?
This is the definition.
But it says it's used by individuals with mobility disabilities.
Whether or not.
Right. So a power-driven mobility device can be used by a person who doesn't have a disability as well. That's where I'm getting what I'm getting at.
I think they probably have some form of disability.
Well, you know, I mean, there's new technologies all the time. Like I'm saying, those motor scooters that are used by individuals for purpose of locomotion, including golf carts, electronic personal assistance, mobility devices, Segways, or any such or similar mobility device. Maybe, I don't know if I'm explaining myself well, but a power-driven mobility device doesn't have to be used by somebody with a disability. Anybody can use a power-driven mobility device. That's what I'm saying.
Like a power scooter, sure.
Yeah, that's when it says that is used by individuals with mobility disabilities.
We don't typically see it very often, so it hasn't come up, it hasn't been an issue, doesn't mean it wouldn't be.
Okay.
But we certainly, I don't think, we would probably handle it on a case-by-case basis. If someone is... brings a golf cart down the Klein Line.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking like I go out and I buy one of these electric Razor scooters,
mm-hmm.
and you don't want me to use it on the trails in Pacific Park,
mm-hmm.
but I'm riding in Pacific Park. Am I restricted from using a power-driven mobility device, or am I just taking that out of context? Would that be some other?
I would have to go into the code. I'd want to read where in the code section we talk about. Power-driven.
Well, I think you're trying to differentiate power-driven versus a pedal or...
Right, a motorized.
You know...
Yeah, if that definition is for power-driven mobility device, it shouldn't be limited to just people with mobility facilities. It should be limited to anybody who wants to use power-driven mobility.
And I just got a question behind you, but also the one thing that we have to be mindful of is like all these new bicycles that are power-driven, and they don't look like they are, but they are.
E-bicycles, you know?
And so they're battery-operated, they're electric. So we know
you get all those new scooters that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah,
in Portland.
Yeah,
got,
that was a mess.
Yeah, but those bikes don't go that fast. I mean, but I wouldn't want to restrict like a bicycle that you can pedal at the same time, but then when you get tired on your way home, you can click it into the, you know, little tiny motor.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be like, you can't ride that through a park, because you should be able to.
Well, the basic premise of our rules in the past have been no motorized vehicles unless you have, you know, you need some mobility assistance because you have, you know, your by the ADA.
Yeah.
Well, if that's true, then if that's the context of power-driven mobility device is for those with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're trying to strict power-driven mobility device,
but
for
they,
Kevin Paff using a razor in Pacific Park,
or coming with a Segway, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Or any other
thing.
You know, it's coming. It's a hoverboard that's coming someday.
Where do you draw the line? You know, I mean, versus a motor scooter.
A dirt bike. Someone had one in Sorensen on the path.
We wouldn't allow a dirt bike.
Well, I know.
It's motorized versus a
battery.
Like a battery. Yeah.
But so long as power driven mobility device applies to people with disabilities only that definition, you're okay. But if you're using power driven mobility devices for some type of a use restriction in an area, generally, I don't know if it should be specified as with disabilities as compared to anybody. If I'm explaining this very well,
no,
I'm confusing myself.
The code section itself could restrict who can use those devices.
Mobility devices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we may have certain restrictions in certain parks.
Right.
We don't know others.
Right.
Like the Louisville Park, for instance, has a road that goes all the way through it. Mm-hmm. You know, so. Anita's got.
That brings up a real question with local crates. And the horse trails that are there, because the battery operated, even if they're disability or if they're just people riding normal, are very quiet, and they can be very surprising to a horse. And Wibble Creek has a lot of green young horses on the trail all the time. People use that. It has an extreme amount of use compared to the other trails in the county. And we have run into some issues. I had a motorized skateboard in there, and he could literally fly down the trail. It's just one tire. And I told him, you know, we're not supposed to have anything motorized. And he just really argued with me. But what do you do on something like that? I mean, even if it is somebody with a disability, if you ask them if they're disabled, per se, aren't you kind of causing a problem? How do you want to handle that? Because there are more now.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the e-bikes that they have, they can actually go 20 miles an hour on the trail. And that can be a real detriment on some of our trails and also equine users. So,
it's difficult because we cannot enforce the rules.
Right, so I just wanted to know what the county say.
So if we see somebody that's feeling that disabled on some kind of motorized vehicle, we let them know that that's not good. You know, it goes against our park rules. If somebody is.
Well, Bill, I have to say, if someone approached me
mm-hmm.
and said, "Are you disabled?" I would be insulted. I don't think that we can approach people and ask them that question, regardless of what they look like. So I think that that leaves us in that gray area of trying to mind our manners.
It's difficult, yes.
As well as wanting to assert certain needs. So I don't think you can put a label of disabled on someone and that they're the... You have to prove your debt. We can, because we've got our cards
mm-hmm.
that the state gives us. But I personally think if someone approached me, I would be insulted. And I just need to say that.
So, that's fine. But if somebody's coming, let's say they're going on a trail on a motorcycle. So
Well, you're not going to see us on a motorcycle.
Well,
you can pretty well assume that they're not disabled. They're on a motorcycle.
Bikes that are disabled. Yeah. And there's horseback riders that ride that are disabled. That's a lot of people.
But there's a difference. And here's my distinction. There are a lot of disabilities in life that limit you from a lot of stuff.
Right.
But the whole concept of using mobility devices, and nobody likes using them, I'll tell you that. Because when I have to use mine, it makes me feel like I'm a crippled old lady. But the difference is if you look at that mobile, mobility, ability to move, if I can't get through there without this device, then it's necessary. If I've got PTSD, so I need to use my electric device,
right.
I could physically walk through there without it. I'm putting a label. I shouldn't. I don't like labels. But you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But to walk up to somebody and say, you can't use that unless you're disabled. Are you disabled?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I wouldn't want to.
You can't do that.
Yeah, that's actually right.
So,
and I hate to get on my tirade about that, but it is very frustrating. You know, how many times I've gone to the grocery store, seen someone pull into a disabled parking spot, my leg's not working, I know I'm not going to make it from the back 40. They pull in, well, that's fine. Then some young kid jumps out and runs in the store. And I want to say, you know, but I don't. But I don't, you know, because they could have an issue I can't see. And they still get to use that spot. So I'm just saying we have to be very cautious when we start looking at putting that label on people.
Right. So it's just basically right now it stands no motorized in the specific parks.
Yeah, no motorized vehicles, but you know, there again, you know, if you see somebody with a motorized wheelchair, they're going to stay working because that's their mobility device, right? Versus like somebody that comes in with a go-kart.
I'm not going to be on a Razor scooter, I'll tell you that.
That's why there has to be a distinction, though, you know?
Yeah,
that's good.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you know,
you need the distinction for the rules, absolutely.
Right. So like Olivia said, so yeah, there's that fine line. But,
yes.
Yeah, we can't really ask the question.
No.
You can tell if it's a teenager on a motorized skateboard.
Or if he's doing one-armed handstands, you know.
All right, so Eric, you want to go through the other?
Yeah,
I'm just moving right along.
No, that's
okay. Sorry,
we
that's
can,
right. No, no, no.
Kevin and I talked about we can sit down or
we'll get a. Yeah, I was going to suggest that Kevin sit with you.
Sure. And then the next section I was going to. There are two more sections we had talked about. One was 9.05.180, which is personal conduct, which is essentially it's UAV or drones.
Mm-hmm.
So we changed number 1B to, we changed it from remote-controlled model airplane to remote-controlled aircraft, comma, unmanned aerial vehicle, or I think this is self-propelled. Can you scroll that up a little bit, Brandon? Thank you. Or self-propelled boat or model rocket. So, the discussion last time around the section was, what do we call it, what do we allow them, and unmanned aerial vehicle attendant seemed to be, or UAV was probably the broadest definition, but we do see a lot of, again, we're starting to see a lot more remote controlled aircraft and UAVs in parks. So that's the change we made there. It'll allow us, this section will give us the authority to, we'll update our authority, because we currently do have the authority to issue permits for UAVs or drones, but this kind of broadens the remote control of model airplane isn't a current definition or a current type of use. So they're still out there, but now more and more we're seeing the stuff where you could just go to Target and buy your drone and off you go.
I'm curious, you know, just thinking about this, you know, we've got super specific about boat and model rockets. What if we have, in the next 10 years, we have the invention of robots, right? You know, stuff like that. I wonder if we had to be a little more specific, like,
devices,
something like that.
Yeah, because we have robots.
We do.
or vacuumed.
So I don't know how you're going to send out your robot to go have fun for you.
Yeah, just playing. That's your pain.
Yeah. All right. Run the trail for me, would you, Betty? Stranger things have happened, obviously.
And then the last section is 9.05.280, which is tobacco products. Yeah. Again, these are all sections that you had comments or feedback
looking to
address, so we're just kind of going through those. Lines
280?
Yeah, go up. Again, most of the changes in here are going to be housekeeping in nature, so sorry if we're skipping over, but these are really the content changes. It's unlawful to use any form of tobacco. Currently, it reads, it's unlawful to use any form of tobacco while in or within the immediate area of the following, and then it lists playgrounds, play areas, shelters, restrooms, etc. What we've updated it to is, it's unlawful to use any form of tobacco and or e-cigarettes while in or within the while in or within 50 feet of the following areas. So that was the feedback that you had provided us, like 50 feet. From my perspective, when we issue park use permits, or for my staff, lifeguards, or otherwise, I have to ultimately remind people of this gently. I think having a number there is helpful because they'll get pushback. Well, what's immediate area?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So it's valid. It's really helpful for us. I can see down the road if and when we go to a board or work sessions. we might get asked, well, why 50 feet? Why not 25 feet? So those questions could arise. But I do think having, well, whatever the number is, I think that's a really, it helps us.
Did you guys look at the difference between e-cigarettes and a vaporizer?
So what I did is I asked public health, in addition to the swim diapers, I asked them to address vaping, because you can vape without tobacco. So it's vaping with nicotine or vaping with tobacco. For our staff, who's ultimately going to be out there to address it, they're not just, someone can say, well, no, it's nicotine, so sorry. So public health's recommendation was to just flat out vaping, period.
Well, some of those other vapes are pretty stinky. They're worse than tobacco.
That was their recommendation.
But that's what I was saying. Because to me, that's saying e-cigarettes, not vaping necessarily. Only vaping if you're using an e-cigarette.
So we could, I think I may have had this written such that it was vaping instead of e-cigarettes, but we can very easily change this.
So I don't have an e-cigarette.
It can be tobacco, comma, vaping, comma, and or e-cigarettes.
I would add the word vaping in there.
Yeah, I get the vaping in there, because some of those are safe.
It's a little broader covering. Somebody will come up with something,
I'd rather smell a cigar than some of those.
Some pipe tobacco.
Just if anyone
smokes
the pipe.
It's tobacco, though.
That's true.
So those were, sorry.
There's tobacco in those pipes.
Yeah. That was really the last change that had to do with content. So then for us, what I'll do is we'll go back through here, take your comments, update this, come back to you, show you, and then you can review it and make recommendations and go from there. We'll need to take it to the council via work session, most likely. In addition to that, if they have any recommendations or changes, we'd probably come back to you so you could hear those, and then we would eventually get it to a public hearing, and then the board approves it, and we're on our merry way. So what the timeline is, I couldn't speak to that because I've not been through this process before. I would imagine it'll take a few months.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah. Can I ask one question? Sure. On the tobacco use, it's 50 feet, but isn't the law like from your businesses, everything else, 20, 25 feet? Wouldn't it be easier to be consistent with what the law is?
How about that?
I like 50 feet.
Well, I do too.
And I've been a smoker many years and struggled with it. But
I
like
just
50
say no
feet because we're in a recreational area. I think it's different than being 25 feet from the door of Safeways.
Versus
25 feet away from the swimming pools.
How about if I just do a little bit of homework on that at least?
Yeah.
So I can provide an update and some. Yeah.
It just seems consistency to me is so important in life. And if that's what the law, and you can say then it's the law, instead of it was just
when we put it in here, it is the law. Though.
One thing I'd like to add real quick, and I know Eric kind of covered it already, the 9.05.060 about animals and birds, on specific to off-leash areas. We had the new board for dog paws approach us and ask us specifically to put the rules in that pertain to off-leash areas. And so some of those rules are probably going to be kind of funky, you know, like those spike collars and different things like that. Eric and I talked a little bit. We thought maybe we could say, just have a blanket statement to disobey rules as posted in off-leash areas. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Code.
Yeah.
That'd be better.
That's way easier then.
I like that better, because then if they add a rule, we're
right.
not going through that process.
You don't have to change the whole thing, yeah.
So.
Or they're having to get county approval, though, to add a rule, right?
Yes.
They
yes.
just can't make
yeah,
that.
They have to bring it through us.
No brown right. dogs or...
Yeah.
Sorry, your dog's brown? No.
No unaltered dogs, no dogs, you know.
Okay. I just want to make sure we have some
right.
say of what their rules are. Okay.
So maybe what we should do is ask them to provide us with their existing set of rules. We can bring them back. So if you want to see
yeah.
what
yeah,
are,
I'd like to see those.
And
sure.
then go from there.
Yeah, yeah those was many years ago when they first started
up. Well, yeah, now that it's under kind of new leadership,
yeah.
if they have
yeah.
any changes,
we do have
right.
I think this is a good time to look at them.
Good.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Eric.
I have no more.
That looked very tedious and hard for you, so thank you very much.
Don't you get into that?
No.
Okay.
All right. So, community liaison update, events planning ahead. We have those listed. Or Laura has those listed on the back of your agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming up, so we're in the month of November. We're past. Leaf rake, well, that's the two weekends. We have tree planting at Turtle Pond.
Oh, that's National Family Volunteer Day. The 7th.
The 7th?
No, the 17th.
17th, okay.
Yeah.
And then the Community's Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee. And then public hearing PIF for trails. Now that's 12-11. Is that a working session? Or what is the 12-11 public hearing PIF for trails?
Yeah, why are there two on the 18th as well?
It's a duplicate. It's okay. It reads the same thing.
Yeah. Well, what day is it?
What is it, 2 days
is it the
11th
or the
2 meetings or 1 meeting?
I think one
yeah.
was a work session and the other
that's
was
what
a hearing.
I thought one was a
yeah.
session and one
yeah,
was the
there is a difference.
Yeah,
that,
I got it on the
actually the 12th.
The 12th, well actually I think that it's weird because on the council's grid it shows that the work sessions start on the 11th, they go through the 12th. So it's actually our work session, ours is on the 12th. And that is for
so
the inclusion of trails.
And it's at 10 still? That doesn't change?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. And then
what
our actual
say?
Hearing
to
12. No,
12.
Our hearing is on the 18th of December.
And then the hearing.
So.
Yeah, because it should be Tuesday.
The one on the 12th is a work session? Yeah, and that
yes.
is a Wednesday.
December 12th is a work session with the council. I believe we've got it for a whole hour.
Oh, yeah, I got it on my calendar.
Okay.
Yeah,
the one on
and
the
then 18th. The one on the 18th is the hearing.
Yep.
Yep. That's when they can provide.
That's why I couldn't see it.
Provide
testimony.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the one on the 12th, of course, is going to be before our next PAP meeting. So
right.
And we can send a reminder if you want to come to that.
Yeah, reminder.
Yes, please. And all right, so that's all that's listed.
So I brought some of the PAP brochures that Barbara had done such a great job on designing. We just kind of had those at the office, and I brought some in case anybody wants to take some with you.
Okay.
Okay.
And then the all PAB meeting, recap next meeting, did we... I can't remember. Didn't we talk about that? I guess it's been since our last meeting, so we didn't get a chance to update. Did we?
Was that for our last?
I thought it was before, and I thought we talked about this.
Yeah, we talked about it.
It was after our meeting, because I made our monthly meeting, but I was in California for the All-PAB. So it was after.
Okay,
okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Time runs together, doesn't it?
It was fun.
Thank you. It was.
No, no, it was a good representation. The Lacamas Lodge there is actually beautiful.
I haven't been there since they did that.
It's just
beautiful.
Amazing, isn't it?
We actually had a quorum.
Yeah, we did.
That was really cool.
Yeah, we had a very good quorum
for
Park
really
County.
There.
Yeah.
You know what impressed me the most about the whole thing is, you know, our conservation futures effort buying the whole North Shoreline. You know, that seed money for cameras to invest another $8 million to get that whole North Shoreline bought up. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
That was really awesome. And that drone video that they showed us was really cool.
Right.
That was amazing. That really showed you the value of the land and what the views and why we should protect it.
Camas took on the dam and the lock and decided to keep that self-insured.
Yeah.
I thought it was
Jerry's barbs about not partnering with them.
Yeah, you did. You did take a few shots on that.
We're going to meet up here real soon. Again, in fact, next week.
Keep getting your hands out. We're not.
And I guess we're on deck for the next one.
We're on the deck for the next one. I think we talked about that in February, maybe, to do that then.
Past the next bad day. Weather.
Yeah. Yeah, get through the holidays and get the new year started, and I think we'll shoot for February. So maybe next meeting in December we can pick a date specific. And we don't want to do it on a Friday evening again.
Get to save the date out.
Yeah, we got to save the date out and everything. So I think that's we'll look at that the next meeting. But if you can make sure that's on the agenda, we pick a date for the next All-PAB, which will be Clark County hosting. And then we can do that in February. So, okay. Anything else that we? I think it was a good meeting.
It was a good meeting. Very good.
I think the thing that's most exciting is like talking with some of the people from Camas. They are so proud to have you there, you know, and to show off their facility.
Right.
I think that if nothing else, I think that makes it well worth it right there. That people are becoming more and more engaged with other advisory boards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one thing, I mean, you know, you always learn something in these events. I learned that Maria, what is her last name?
From Richfield?
Richfield, yeah. They, you know, we're serving on the DEEB subcommittee, and she said they have it all mapped out. They have credits, if you come in as a developer and do a certain amount of work, they'll give you a certain amount of credits. They have those all identified, and so I've asked her for that information so that we have something to go back to the subcommittee and talk to about and say, well, here's what they're doing. Now, they also are the ones that require 25% of your development to go into park and open space. So it behooves you.
But now they don't have if there to sustain them, so that's more realistic.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it was at least somebody's got a framework and an operating credit system, if you will, for lack of better terminology, that we ought to look at and see.
Yes.
You know, and I haven't talked to anybody developing it in that area. I have no idea how well it's accepted or received. So, but I've got an email into her to see if she can give me that information back, and hopefully in time for our subcommittee meetings.
So. Well, that's Monday, so
Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Has LaCenter attended any of those?
No, none that I've been to.
Who? LaCenter? They're invited, though?
Not recently. They're invited, yes.
Okay, I can't remember them.
They don't have a Parks Advisory Board, per se, but there were two people that are on
the list from out there. Because Naomi has a plan for their trail system and stuff that's pretty impressive up there.
Is she the one who came for the Conservation Futures?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, she's really involved.
Yeah, so I was just curious. Okay.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
Because, she knows us.
Yeah, no.
And they use fishing trails.
Yep.
Yeah, their park staff is invited, and I think they're Jeff something. Help me out. Saban? Is that right?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, we're inclusive of them even though they don't have a group. Only because they're very active, obviously, out mm-hmm. there mm-hmm. with Holly Park and all that.
Right.
Their community is active and interested in parks. It's just they don't have the formality of a advisory.
We're doing a trail now, and they do have a PIF credit for trails there. So right. I was just...
Yeah.
Okay.
I did see on Facebook that Friends of Ridgefield Wildlife Refuge is looking for more board members, and I was wondering maybe we should invite them to the All PAB, just because if we're talking about the Lewis and Clark Trail or whatever, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It might be nice to have maybe someone like that involved too, especially since we're going to try to be doing a lot up in that area.
Well, mm-hmm. and I will tell you that in our All PAB, the original picnic, we did include all of these groups, mm-hmm. and the feedback that we got and the reason we tailored it back was several of the other PABs said if it's an all PAB, it should just be PAB members. So that's my question there, is where do you draw the line on who's invited and who isn't? Do we invite the Friends of Clark County? Do we invite the Equestrian? You know what
I
I'm
think
saying?
It can be special guests, though, for a specific meeting.
Guests,
so
yeah.
if we're hosting and we're talking about the trail.
Well, especially where one of the things that I've always thought was good and that when we do it, we've always done, is have that special guest yeah. speaker that speaks about something
yep.
and not just talk about us.
Yeah.
And I think that it's an educational opportunity and that absolutely I think we should look at that. But I'm just saying I wouldn't want to, because we had 200 and some odd people we invited to that original one.
Yeah.
And then we were asked to pare back, and if we wanted to truly function, it needed to be small enough where we could function.
And
others would not be hesitant to host.
I think the amount of people we've been having has been...
Yeah, it's a nice,
yeah, it's a good conversation.
Nice turnout.
Yes, yeah, about 30. So we
yeah.
have about
yeah. yeah, 30, 40.
Everyone can talk and
yep.
knowledgeable people. There are people that are involved in the
yeah.
project.
Common interest.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll keep moving forward on that and do that. Dog paws.
Dog paw. So our kind of talked to you about that already. So I met with a new board and pretty much told them. The whole dog licensing, park entry thing, that's kind of on hold. We're going to have to figure that out and see what the legalities are on that. I'm kind of curious to see what the city of Vancouver is going to do. Because it sounds like, are they moving forward with introducing that at the Ross Complex, which is on BPA land? So
we're discussing it.
Discussing
yep.
it? Okay, so that's a possibility. So it's interesting. It does sound like the city was successful in funding a animal control officer.
Yay!
In the county. So that was really cool to hear. I'm really happy to hear that. That's great. That means we'll actually hire an additional officer just for the city of Vancouver to
yeah.
support them, you know, in their future off-leash areas as well as all the rest of the parks. So I'd like to follow suit if we could and actually have somebody that is, you know, payroll just to take care of parks, because we've got thousands of acres to contend with multiple sites, so I think that'd be great. So we'll take a look and see what right now general fund, nothing's going through general fund right now at all, and so animal control is general fund based, so we'd have to figure out what kind of funding we can come up with to support that, either in part or in whole. So we'll see. But we did talk to the board. They're very excited about moving forward with us. They're talking to us about having difficulties affording the maintenance of the off-leash areas that they currently take care of. We take care of Pacific Park, which is the most prominent off-leash area. We do the lion's share of the maintenance there, but it's the other two, the 149th Street, West Prairie, and the Hawkinson, that they claim that it's costing them, well, for all the sites, it's costing them about $100,000 a year, and they are going in the red every year because they just can't... bring in enough funding to offset that.
That seems like a lot of money, $100,000.
It seems like a lot of money.
For the size of those two. Hawkinson's really small.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, what did they spend it on?
Their trash has to be pretty spendy.
It's not just maintenance. It's their outreach, all their operations throughout
the year.
Outreach. I've asked them for they're making expenses for these outreach areas to see what it's costing them, because they do contract out rough mowing, they do contract with our vegetation management to do weed spraying, and so they do have expenses out there. They do pay to have duck poop picked up. We pay at Pacific, but they pay for the other sites, and so there are expenses, but I'd like to see those expenses specifically. So we have to start meeting those expenses. I want to know what those look like. Yeah. So we're trying to help them to help us. That's kind of where we're going on this. So we want to make sure that this relationship keeps going forward, because it'd be kind of sad to lose DAGPA as an organization, because they are out there on a regular basis as volunteers doing great stuff for us. And so we need to help them where we can, especially if they're struggling. So, but with the new president that's out there right now, I'm anticipating that we're going to have a good relationship and that we can move forward together.
So that's Eileen?
Yeah, Eileen, yep.
Okay.
So that's the word on DAGPA. And so we need to, we can probably schedule another meeting where they come back here and we can do a meet and greet.
That'd be good.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I think they'll see what they're doing, see how we
go.
Yeah, maybe even this next meeting in December.
Yeah.
Have you guys all been to the
dog parks? I've been to two of them.
Okay.
I've been to all of them.
Okay.
That might be a decent field trip, though.
Or if we're in an area by one of them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
taking
in at the dog park.
Sure,
yeah.
You bet. We can do that.
Just to kind of get a visual of, you know. I know Pacific's is so big.
You did take us by Pacific.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Pacific. And then it was a couple of years ago, but we did stop at 149th Street just to look at that one. At Birth Prairie.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. They have the agility course there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that one just seems, I mean, I guess that's not going to be the it's not the middle of nowhere anymore.
It kind of is right now, though.
Well, there's a lot of development.
There's a couple big developments going out there, and that's where we drive all the way out there because it's less populated.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that do.
And Hawkinson's probably the least used because you have to walk to get in there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, the parking lot's quite a ways away, so it does require a little bit of effort.
A lot of dog off-leash.
Oh, yeah. you know, we've got a lot of off-leash areas, a lot of off-leash activity at all of our green spaces, our undeveloped parks.
Yeah.
People just unclip and they go.
Trying to find another place, yep.
Yep. So it's hard to enforce the rules out there. We just had a call just the other day about what people want enforcement out there at one of our developed parks. It's tough. You know, it's hard to get an officer out there to enforce that. So.
By the time you get out there, they're gone.
On that topic, it made me think, because the one that's off right by Austin Heritage, 99th and 137th or whatever that is.
Yeah,
so that one. Yeah, that vacant land.
Oh, the vacant land.
The vacant land.
That's Vigra.
Yeah. So that one. You know, they talk about we have to put in these storm facilities in the parking lots, except that place is full of dogs without cars parked there every day. So somehow they're getting, you know, and there's a lot of houses around there, so it makes sense. So I'm just curious if there is opportunity for dog parks without the huge expense of the big parking lots.
Yeah,
I mean, so if it's serving the neighborhood, people can walk to them.
I don't know, something to think about
because it just blew me away, because every time I drive by there's a bunch of dogs out there, and there's no cars.
Yeah.
Doggy daycare. Drop them on
official days
all day.
Oh, yeah. School's big time.
Unofficial. The problem with making them semi-official or saying, hey, can we run our dogs off leash here? If we were going to develop it, you know, you've got that placeholder of, this is an off-leash area. They can't turn it into a park.
We had that problem with Sorensen. People were like, well, this is a dog park.
Yeah.
When we were trying.
Exactly.
And it's like,
no,
people just illegally run their dogs here. There's a difference between that and an
actual difference between that.
Dog park.
That's the mentality.
Yeah. That's a good point, though, Bill. It's hard to go back.
It is.
Yeah.
To take away a service or a privilege once you have it. So.
Have we ever thought of maybe, like, in our really big part, is it like maybe doing more models of like Pacific where we have a dog park in with other amenities? Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of
Frenchman is the one I think of down on the end where no one's out, where that shelter is way down on the beach. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be a walk, but especially if you could get water access, that'd be awesome.
That'd be a good spot.
Because I'd like to see maybe more collaborative components in our parks. Like that. I think Pacific works for families because you can go run your dog and exhaust it and then just put it on a leash while your kid goes and plays on the playground because it's tired. And then it's kind of one-stop shopping. So
get your kid off the leash and have the dog off the leash.
That's true. Exactly.
Well, maybe there's room for some talk with this deep thing on that.
Yeah. You want to hop onto our subcommittee? More the merrier.
Well, promising the dog paw.
It's a good segue into our deep discussion.
We really don't have much. We have our next meeting set up on Tuesday.
Next Tuesday?
So the consensus theme from last time, because I know Dave wasn't here, Dave had some, one of their big things they're caught up on is inventory. Yes. So they want us to pretty much restructure what we're counting.
We came
back to the table, Jay and I, and said that, and the groups pretty much was like, if we're ever going to talk about that, it's going to be when we reopen the PROS plan. I need to research before that meeting what like the national standards are on counting school property in terms of inventory. Because if it's just like a national standard not to do it, then if it's not a standard in the process, then it's not really an issue. Like, that's not how you do it. So the answer would be no for me. It's a non-issue. It's not our opinion. It shouldn't be. It's the standard is you don't count that. Right. So
well,
I need
think
to
Jennifer's
find that.
Comment also said that the school would object to us counting it
because
it's not our land.
Right.
Yeah, and
it's theirs.
And it's nice to have an ally in that too.
So
it's just
I could have Steve do help us with researching that just a bit.
Yeah, could we just drop him that one quick question? Is it standard to count schools as inventory? Because if we can just say no, it's not, that's
right.
going to just
draw the line
there, and we're not going to have to keep. I mean, because.
And if
Eric
you have the
really
documentation
stepped on
back
it.
Up.
Exactly.
That's,
because
yeah.
we, I mean, I don't, and Jennifer had a lot of really strong points at our meeting last month about, you know, yes, we need to compromise, and yes, we need to make, you know, work together to have collaborative parks, but at the same time, we can't let, we don't dictate building standards and development standards, because that's not our area of expertise.
Right.
So why are we letting them try to dictate park standards, because that is the Parks Department's area of expertise. So again, I'm open to collaborative efforts, but at the same time, I don't want to. I feel like we're giving, and I'm not seeing it coming back as much, you know. So I'd like to. I want to, you know. I think we have some good ideas with them, and like the two-tiered system of. Giving them PIF credits, I like that. I mean, we're making some progress, but there are some things I just think the
and
board
and we deferred the implementation of them.
The trails, yeah. So
right.
we've given
so,
some
yeah,
things.
We've given is yeah.
And so I just want to make sure. I want to have a good relationship, but I don't want that to be defined by just giving things away.
I wonder if Jennifer is available to come as a school representative.
I would
and make
love
her and make her statement that the schools are not enamored of this. And that if we'd like to maybe make Steve's house a play area as well,
yeah,
we could include his property.
But it's
not our property, so we should not include it. And that was a pretty clear definition in my mind.
And I just want to see that like as an industry standard, if that is, because then it just kind of closes the book on the subject, and then. We can move on because that's a real sticking point. I feel right now they're just really stuck on.
Well, that, and that's
and
what they're trying to do.
And we'll something else when we clear that one off. So.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
No.
Well, this is one.
We'll do our due diligence.
This is their demand, right? Or they want to just lower the demand. They feel like due to the demand we're overselling. You know,
we're
listening, shortage,
and that's the important part.
Yeah. So I'll try to do some research on my own, but if I hit a Tuesday, that doesn't give us any time to really contact him because Monday's a holiday.
So I'll talk to Steve because he does a lot of comp plans, you know, PROS plans around all over the place, around the country. And so that's actually included in all his PROS plans, so he would know.
Yeah, I would love to know the
schools or churches or any other, you know, nonprofit.
Whatever the industry standard, lack of an word industry, but I mean, you know, the standard would be.
And because
we don't include this lot over here where the church actually owns the property and lets us use it for the practice, do we?
Yeah.
I would hope we do because it's being used for recreation.
We actually, because
we do count.
We have an exclusive agreement with them.
Ah.
Because, so we do count. Yeah.
So,
and we
have an exclusive agreement.
We spent $400,000 fixing it up. So we put irrigation on it,
sure.
So it stays green and all that stuff. And so we have like a 20-year agreement with them. So we
but I know in the city of Camas.
But the agreement, it overrides. It's like you're leasing the property.
Exactly,
so.
Yeah.
So in my mind, that explains that.
Right.
Is there any other examples of where we don't own the property that we do or don't?
Three or four examples of school properties that we share with. So we've actually got our property that's either on school property or adjacent to. So Geyser, Vision Lee, Eisenhower. Eisenhower is actually one of our first MPD parks that was built. We have 5 acres that abuts Eisenhower school property.
Well, wasn't Sorensen?
It's right next to
that little, but that one little area where the gate is actually on the school property that they gave us, that little triangle or whatever. So we do have partnerships.
We do have partnerships, but I think what we're talking about is using school playgrounds, school fields, and counting that as park property. And the problem is it's off limits during school hours, right? It's off limits to pretty much everybody except for the kids that are at school.
Yeah.
You know, so if adults want to go there and walk, they can't, that kind of thing. So it's going to be a building. So that's what we need to define. Because if we...
Yeah, if we have 100% access, that's different.
Cool.
Yeah.
No sense.
Because if we add schools to our list, that's going to be an enormous acreage.
It's going to kill our kids. Yeah,
it will.
They will plummet.
Right.
And they know that. Yep. So that's...
But that goes back to your other statement, or back to Jennifer, which is, this is not the time for them to be dictating how we do our business.
True, and...
We know better what the community needs in the way of parks and recreation than what DEEB does.
Yeah, and if we can just say, no one counts schools in any sort of planning in terms of what park facilities are needed. I think that's just
And for these reasons.
Yeah. So this is not like really something
Another great source would be the National Recreation and Parks Association. That's nationwide. We can ask that question.
Okay.
What they might know about it. So,
You mentioned Geyser Park.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so is that a community park?
It's a small neighborhood park. It's very small. We have a trail that comes up and goes to our playground. So we have our own playground that our staff maintains. And so the rest of it, the open fields and everything, that's kind of off limits.
But all that area is included in our calculation for...
The piece that we own, yes.
The piece that we own.
Yeah, we have... How many acres there, Doug? Say maybe no more than one?
Yeah.
It's just a trail up to a playground.
Now, what about the rest of that area?
Not counted.
That's school property.
That's school property.
Yeah, we're not supposed to be out.
See, and that's what Eric's using as his prime example.
That's where his kids
play.
That's
his poster child. Is he saying, well, everybody gets to play on that property.
Right.
You know, so why can't we use that as part of the park's, you know, usage? Right. And but again, if that's school property.
We've got Jason Lee, which we have the same thing. So you've got a playground and a walkway, an actual asphalt walk that goes all around the entire school.
Right.
The walk and the playground is ours, but you better not go out in that grass and do anything different because you're on school property. So,
Or like West Chinook, where we even went in, and I do believe that we paid for the upgrades to make that little area by the deer and stuff flat enough for soccer practice. But we don't count that because it's school property and we can't access it. So there's lots of schools that we've got this going on with that doesn't justify why it should be counted, in my mind.
We get Sunset, where we have a 5-acre parcel next to a school there. So, the kids go through it every day, back and forth to the school. But
I think we're just lucky that these schools partner with us so well.
And I don't want to abuse that by just trying to claim their property, and wear and tear on their property because we don't have sufficient parks.
We'll check with NRPA and the National Recreation Park Association and see what they may have because they've probably done some polls. If we were to include school properties, I would say probably on a sustained basis based on accessibility.
Yeah.
So let's say, 10% per acre or something like that instead of acre to acre.
Or 90% of, the day of daylight hours in the winter. School is used from 7 to 4. It's dark at 4:30, so they get a half hour a day from
the You're not serious.
I'm serious.
But if you want to go,
I'm not willing.
So I can see the other side, and then they come back and they say, well, yes, but a certain population of the users of the park are in the school at that time, so therefore your need is reduced during that time.
That's what their argument is.
Yep, that's it.
That's what their argument is.
But I told Eric, if you're silly, well, if you think only people who use parks are between the ages of 5 and 18.
Right.
Because that's what you're saying, is parks are only for people from kindergarten to seniors in high school, when there are plenty of other people who access parks.
Sure.
And well, I want a 50% reduction on my home, because I only spend half my day there.
Yeah.
I want that too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. Let's form a subcommittee on that. All right. So we've got. We'll see how the meeting goes on Tuesday. See what it brings back to us. Developed and undeveloped parkland. Bill, next step.
So yeah, we want to take this full steam ahead after the beginning of the year. I know that Dave, you and Milana and Jamie finished that up in August, and so we're going to put that on the docket for 2019 to be approved and active in 2020. They wouldn't allow us to put anything more on the docket. It was a real stretch to even get this PIP onto the docket. So definitely want to do that and get that thing moving. So we'll probably start really doing a full court press in January on this thing and moving it ahead.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Camp Curry Lagomas Trail Grant Conversion. You apparently need a motion on this.
Not yet.
Okay.
So it's kind of like pushing the boulder uphill and not doing very well, you know, losing ground. Grant conversions take a long time, and so the whole public process, Jeremy's been working with the RCO on this and trying to hit the right criteria, the right... Yeah, you want to talk about it real quick, Jeremy?
So there's a draft or a public notice that I'm working on, and just going back and forth with the RCO, there's certain criteria, and I've never been down this road before, so it's new to me, but crafting it such so that it meets all their requirements, and it's a little different because in this instance, the pump station that we're asking to be converted is already completed, so but we still need public input on that. So anyways, fine-tuning it, hopefully have it here soon.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll let you know when it's ready.
That's fine.
So,
that's fine.
So when it's ready, we'll seek a motion of your support to move ahead.
All right. And then the PIF addition of the trails update.
So we've kind of talked about that on and off today. So since our last meeting, we had a planning commission hearing. And Barbara came in and provided testimony, which was great. And we had a scout troop that came. That was really cool. And so they were there to get their badges for being in a public meeting, you know, and being a part, participating in a public meeting. And so they got to hear the spiel. And so the planning commission voted unanimously to support the trails inclusion, and also to not modify the fee because of the trails inclusion. So we've been pretty consistent with all of our public outreach so far. So, of course, our next step is the work session on the 12th of December. So.
But they did approve the formula that includes the trails.
Yes, they did approve. Yep, they did that. Okay. Not to increase the fee because of the formula.
Yeah, not to implement the increase.
Right.
That was one of Deeb's concerns, too, was that if the, actually it's two concerns. One is including the trails in the PIF calculation, that increases the fee. And then are we implementing it now? And we said no, you know, as of right now. And they said, but just because you include it doesn't mean you won't, you know, add it later on.
And right. We said yeah, yes, we will.
Yes, that's a true statement. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll...
We can divide the reason why we weren't including it right now, and that's because we're still in the midway of increasing our fees.
Right.
We're implementing the 80, 90, 100% increase to the fees. So we figured it would add insult to injury by doing that.
Well, that, and I mean, but, you know, we're kind of not getting any credit for that, you know, from the deed people. So at least that's the impression I got. Yeah. That we're not...
providing them anything.
Well, yeah. This is not like,
Oh, that's nice of you, but you're just delaying the inevitable. And it's like, well, yes.
Right. When we met with the BIA, and although we did not get anything from them as far as a motion, it's been pretty quiet. You know, Eric Galimo, of course, he is the chair of the BIA, and he's who you're talking to on the deep aspect.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so they seem to be okay with it. Didn't really talk about going back on reducing fees at the time. So. It's just
been, hasn't been brought up yet.
It hasn't. Really, it's been moving through. And what we're trying to do here is actually counselor driven, you know, this including trails into PIP. So I would suspect that our work session and our hearing should go fairly smoothly, I guess.
Now, when does the new council members come on board?
January, do you know? Our new council members, when do they actually take hold?
January 1st.
Oh, on the 1st. Okay.
Yeah, so they'll be the no. first day, and then
if it's Eileen when to start.
Right.
First
right.
people then vet, and then they get to nominate three Republicans.
So we could have even another one.
Okay.
That's it. So.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's, I'm just writing initials to figure out what things would go our way.
Can I interject you real quick?
Yeah, sure.
I just actually got an email from Marcio that approved our draft version, so I don't know if we want to take it again now real quick. But it's been approved, and this is it.
It's been approved.
Good.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Congrats.
Thanks. I don't know.
What's your next step after this, then?
So it'll be defining the 30-day period, posting it on the website, and then having PAB approve it.
So should we wait until December to seek a motion?
Yeah, we could do that. And then I'm wondering if we could start that 30-day period here soon.
Yeah,
because then we'd have the comments.
We need to see if they're right. Make a motion.
Great move. The comments to review.
Good idea.
So we can start that 30-day period quickly, and we just need to post it on our website.
Right.
Okay.
Do that when you get back to the office and start today.
Yeah,
you do.
Okay, well, that'll be our plan then. We'll get this thing wrapped. That'd be great.
Can I forward that to have them this week?
Yeah.
Does that work?
I'll just take
start
the draft
water bottle
there and
do
PDF and send it to you.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Next month. We'll have some comments back and see when we go. Yeah. Start. All right. Public benefit rating system. And I saw we have a lot of material in this about this.
Yeah. Our all-PAD meeting that just came out.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Was this the all-PAD meeting? Or
yes.
It was.
That's correct.
Right. And this came in after our meeting with the treasurer here on site. So it's kind of a cool little sheet to look at it. And then also, John sent us a letter. He was not here, but he also provided his input in his fashion, which we adore. So.
In his own way.
In his own way, yes. With his digressions and all kinds of stuff in there. So, the one thing I think that at some point in time we will need to provide a rating system that is similar to what we see from the handouts that we have. That I think there's a model here from King County that shows how we would, Pierce County, King County. It shows what we would prioritize as, you know, the highest level. Because our treasurer, Peter Van Nortwick, will need to know from us what our priorities are. So he knows how to evaluate these properties for tax break purposes. So so that's something that we'll probably have to bring that crew back in here again, the ones that gave us a presentation.
Yeah.
Peter Van Nortwick, who was just recently reelected again, and his staff to actually further discuss this PBR system. So basically, you know, the one thing that's interesting about this is that it goes beyond the county. So our county treasurer collects taxes countywide within the cities and everywhere within the county. So each and every piece of property out there, we collect the taxes on. And so this could actually go to all the cities as well. So if we want to build our trail, Lewis Park Trail, along the Old Evergreen Highway, all those folks are in the city of Vancouver or city Camas. They could potentially be eligible for these tax breaks if they allow us access on their property for public use.
Sure.
So it could potentially save us, millions of dollars in acquiring permanent easements.
Yeah.
So if we can get it through tax breaks, that's a huge win for us. The one thing. I'm going to say this one more time, and, that's, and John mentions that in his letter, is that every time we provide a tax break, that amount of money gets shifted throughout all the rest of the taxpayers. So we need to have the money comes in regardless. So if we're going to give breaks to, like, say, 100 people, then the rest of the population has to make up the difference for those people.
Right.
So I don't think...
Is
there
a change?
What's that?
You
didn't
do
this.
Well,
I'm
trying
to
understand this one.
I'll send it back
out. I send it electronically. Yeah, where we can.
Yeah, so you can expand it.
And
I was trying to save paper.
Oh,
that's
fine.
We want you to save
paper. It is, yeah.
So essentially, we need to just keep formulating our thoughts on this as a group. And yeah. Then we'll have them come back, we'll give them some more feedback, mm-hmm. and they're eventually looking for a motion from us on if, from a Parks and Rec standpoint, we are in support of this.
They want support, and then we also want to actually go farther than that and actually come back with some kind of...
Oh, I was going to say, you just, yeah.
Yeah, some kind of sheet showing.
They want us to do that, or they're going to give us a draft of what they think is best?
Well, it's going to be up to like Kevin and I.
You guys are going
to
do it.
To make that final determination as to what priorities are, but we'd like to make sure that we bounce about you and we're reflecting what your voices are, you know, what you have to say about it.
It looked like you're making this pretty similar to what King County had.
This is a sample from King County.
Didn't you give us one that they were working on?
The
electronic version. Yeah, it was in the initial packet.
Yeah.
Yes.
What I can do is I'll just do a PDRS email and it'll include everything.
That'd be great.
Including the PowerPoint and then all the material, so you have it all in one email.
Yeah, because when I was looking at the one that you gave us, it showed the point ratings. I was wondering, well, where are they getting the point ratings from? Well, obviously they're comparing what other did.
Right.
And they set priorities for Clark County.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Based upon
different areas.
I'm guessing priorities from the different departments within the county.
Correct.
What they want to do. Okay. That makes sense to me.
Right.
Okay.
Well, we've got to be a little careful and a little bit aware of what we're doing, because if we give developers credit off the PIF fees and then we have this come along and we end up with tax, pretty soon we're giving away everything, every revenue stream, or we've impacted every revenue stream we could have as a county to the parks, for the acquisition, for the maintenance, for the, you know, I mean, we need to think through this a little bit.
The PIF credits that they get today, I think will end up just standardizing in a different format so they can't double dip. Because don't they get density credits as well? When they, at least that's what they did in the neighborhood next to us when they agreed to do that park area. That crap park, but
not always.
No, I was gonna say
not all of you.
I haven't done.
They resized them, then the neighbors took them to court and sued them to make them in the larger lot sizes.
Yeah, no, I've done a lot of PUDs in the county, and I have never done a density bonus in the Clark County. It's just not worth it.
No, it's not worth it. Well, they bothered down the street from me.
Well, it looked, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was looking through the PBRS stuff, it looked like there were some exceptions for O&M where the homeowner would maintain that property in a certain condition unless we did some hardened improvements to it, and then they would become our responsibility to maintain, correct?
Right.
That's one benefit is that we're not O&M, and it depends on the size of the development or the size of the improvement or the type of improvement.
But what if they're not...
How many points they get, but also who's maintaining what as well.
But that makes me nervous, keeping maintenance up, because if we're assuming liability and we're not ensuring that space is maintained in a safe manner...
Like aquifers or for habitat or those types of things.
It's not
public access.
No, but we already discussed, like, the only way I would be comfortable doing this is if the county assumed liability.
They do, right.
However, if we leave maintenance up to, like, at a trailhead or something and there's a rock slide, let's say, or whatever, and those people weren't maintaining that space and we had an agreement with them to maintain it, I don't want the county to be liable for when they're neglecting maintenance. But we don't have the staff to run out and check all of these locations all the time to make sure they're being maintained at our specification at that point, I'd rather just maintain them.
It comes a level
yeah.
of service.
I mean, yeah, so that stuff like that is
so
tricky.
Then they don't get a benefit.
But Kelsey, kind of depending yeah. upon the size of the development, too. I mean, if, like I said, it was a riparian protection
or if it's something like that.
Or
yeah, that's
that type
different.
Of a thing, you know, that's kind of a hands-off approach except for maybe mowing or weeding.
Sure.
There'd only be about 20% of the developments that would yeah. go across all these different.
But if it were something where the public areas. Is accessing, I don't
right.
know
and,
if
and
I would
I think
want.
It was spelled out with the county, if there was hardened improvements, for instance, like a dirt trail, it would be a certain amount of maintenance, but it was a hard paved trail.
Yeah.
There would be a higher level of maintenance by the county, or maybe even 100% by the county, mm-hmm. and very little by the homeowner. So it kind of depended when you read through that PBRS scale.
Yeah.
PBR.
I know. You said that accidentally twice.
What level of responsibility the homeowner takes on, and what level the county takes on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a sliding scale.
So on the Kelly Meadows easement that we have from 63rd North,
mm-hmm.
is the homeowner still maintaining that
he's still
grass?
Yeah, right, but it actually okay. is an unrestricted easement, so
right.
all access purposes, utilities and everything. So.
Okay, and then once we put a trail in or whatever,
yeah.
or then is it on us or is it still on
it's
him?
It's on us.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he still gets the benefit under the PBRS scenario.
We've already owned that easement.
Oh, okay, so we already own it, so
yeah.
he's gotten the benefit of what he's going to get
right.
once he gets paid.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
I was just wondering how
yeah, no, no,
those
yeah,
cars
that, yeah,
in that
yeah.
case. Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, see, that's the component that a lot of people don't understand. We've got to maintain this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having worked in the maintenance, O&M and maintenance world for a long time, I know that's not a revenue-generating area.
No.
So you have to fight for every dollar you get.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's hard to come by.
It is.
Yeah.
It's very hard. Okay.
Don't forget to add the letter to
the
business.
The Moulton Falls. I've got
yeah.
that down.
And I wrote Bolt's letter down too. If I could
okay. Yeah,
down
yeah,
down.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Sure. Why don't you, let's do this. We've added two items in new business along with the nomination officers. Let's go through the two items and we'll leave the nomination of the officers discussion to the end.
Okay.
All right, so you want to talk about letter?
Yeah, quickly, when Mark Bolt lost the primary, we briefly discussed maybe writing him a letter from the
Thank
board
you.
Thanking him for his park advocacy. I wrote it like right after the primary, and then I left it in Google Docs, and then after this election, I was like, oh, I never printed that letter off. So I have it here if you want to sign it. I left room for multiple people to sign it. So if you want to sign it, great. If you don't. And then could I give it to you guys to enter office, or should I
sure.
mail it directly to him? Or what?
Do you want to read it to us?
Oh, sure. I'll read it to you.
We don't have to do it individually.
Fair enough. So it says, Dear Councillor Bolt, the Parks Advisory Board would like to convey their appreciation and thanks for your consistent support of parks in Clark County over the years. You've been a strong and steady advocate for parks and open space. Your long-term vision will be felt here generations from now with projects like Conservation Futures, various neighborhood and community parks, Camp Bonneville, and Heritage Farm. We've admired your ability to make difficult decisions that in the end have proved beneficial to providing safe, clean, and healthy parks. You often came to our meetings and field trips and always listened to the opinions of the Park Advisory Board as well as park staff. That level of engagement provides validation for volunteers like ourselves and makes staff feel supported and heard. Your support and advocacy will be sorely missed. We wish you the best in your next endeavor and hope you will remain an ally and advocate for Clark County Parks.
Very nice.
Very
nice.
Thank you. All right. So I will send it around if people want to sign it and figure out how to deliver it to him. Because I'd like to get it to him before
yeah.
January, before he leaves.
So.
Sure.
Yeah. We'll get it right to him.
Great.
Okay. Second item was the Moulton Falls. Linda, and I forget her last name,
Loren.
I apologize, Loren brought up. Do we, you know, Bill, what do we need to do to, you know, I assume we're positive on that.
I like what she presented today. I was a little reluctant because Ahmad was here today.
Sure.
And Kevin and I were talking to Ahmad about another piece of property that we were looking at for trust transfer, and said we don't want that because it has slide potential.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The deal with that was it was Livingston Mountain area, and there are homes at the bottom, and so that slide potential would have landed on homes.
this piece here, it looks like it's compact enough to where it might make really good sense for us to own that. Mm-hmm. And that would actually improve the view shed from the trail system, especially when you first get on it from the Hentwick Trailhead. Mm-hmm. So I like your proposal. Yeah. I think it's something that is very very tangible, and we can move forward with it. So I would think that a motion to support would be definitely in order.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
And then Jay or myself write a letter. Is that then if we support? That's what she's asking for, essentially, right?
Yes, a letter of support that goes directly to DNR to support the trust fund transfer of the expanded area.
Should that come from the PAB? Should that come from the county? What
the advisory board?
I think the advisory board, and then I think that if we'll seek the support from our county manager as well.
Okay.
And so that we, as staff, can write a letter and have that signed off by the county manager.
Great. So two letters.
So we'll have two letters. Okay.
Okay. So that's kind of what I was getting to.
Yeah.
We need two letters and one letter.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it sounds like time is of the essence because it's
right.
You know, it's going to happen before we reconvene as a board again. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, okay. We certainly don't want to miss the opportunity.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. All right. Well, I'll make a motion to support. Tell me if I'm saying the parcels wrong. The support of a trust land transfer with DNR for parcel
number
one. Is there anything else I need to add?
I don't think so. It can be straightforward. Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's a land transfer. Is the
trust
term?
Land.
Trust yeah. Land.
Trust land transfer.
Trust.
Yeah. Okay. For all of unit TLT. One, our expansion to include all of unit one. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, so theoretically, can you guys, is there someone you're speaking with at DNR that I should send up? Could you give me their address?
Yes.
Point of contact.
Second
motion. All right. So Barbara has been moved and seconded to author a letter from the PAB in support of the Moulton Falls Trust Land Transfer. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed. All right. So it passes.
Awesome. Woo-hoo.
Great.
Just writing letters all over.
Yeah. All right.
Well, no, you demonstrated you're good at it here.
Thank you.
All right. So nomination of officers. I think we were going to talk about it today, kind of come up with a slate, and then next month vote on that. Is that what we were? Is that kind of the process?
So you can do nominations today. Since we have a meeting next month, we can do nominations and elections.
Well, it's important for people to declare their intention.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
and I think,
that way you know who got to vote for.
One thing I was curious about for re-elections, I think half our board is up for re-elections, right?
Yeah, Kelsey and I were talking about that.
So this is you mean for renewal?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And so
if they want to run, do we let them?
Do you know when that process is going to be? Like when they're supposed? I haven't heard anything.
You know, we had to have it by November.
Yeah. November 17th.
The deadline is next Friday, and so I'll be putting a draft recommendation together. Bill will review it, and then we'll send it on to the.
But you have to send your resume.
I'm hoping. I don't know when they would meet.
You send your letter in.
Give us an answer before our next meeting.
They'll typically meet at 4 times, which is on Wednesday, Tuesday afternoon, or Wednesday, and they'll discuss it. And so traditionally, it hasn't happened all the time, as Barbara and Kelly Putney well know, that we usually give them a recommendation, and they would normally accept that recommendation and move forward. And so. There was one time in the past where they didn't accept our recommendation and they chose otherwise. We don't know, but we'll see. So as soon as that closes, we will make a recommendation, send it out to the board. They can make their decision and then notify us. So it'll be the protocol.
Okay, so then do we? So are we premature in the discussion or?
Well, that should happen before next meeting. Quite frankly, so if it closes next week. That whole turnaround process should happen before the 14th of December pretty easily.
Okay.
Will you let us know when the work session is that they are discussing it?
The board time?
Yeah, or the board time.
Yeah.
Just so I can listen.
Sure,
do
that.
Okay. Well, Jay and I had discussed, I mean, if no one else wants to
do chairs, we're fine continuing. But if someone is chomping at the bit, we're also fine to not continue. So it's kind of.
Didn't you say something, Kevin, about
I appreciate their leadership.
Yeah.
I think they've been really dynamic. They've been reaching out quite a bit, supporting a lot of community efforts.
Yeah. Well, again, I think it's been very organized, too, yes. Which I appreciate.
Okay. But, Kevin, if you have, I mean, the reason why, one of the reasons that Kelsey and I are co-chairs is because we both have day jobs. And she has two. She's a substitute and a mom, so. But if you want to step up and want to give a try, that's fine too.
At this point, no. I don't want to step for leadership. I'm still on a tremendous learning curve here. A lot of these things that we're talking about, I've never even heard of before. So I don't feel primed or
that's fine. I just
shepherdship.
Part of our effort was just self-preservation to make sure the two of us, we
stay sane.
Stay sane.
Are you still okay? Kind of like because I've totally dropped off of the Lewis and Clark.
I've tried to
are
keep
you
that
cool
as much as possible.
Still, good.
I try to keep that. I know I missed some meetings because I haven't been around and stuff. But I'm trying to stay engaged. At least representing the PAB at those meetings.
That's great because I'll say I can't with all my time commitments now. I can't do that. I can't pick up any additional PAB activities besides what I'm maintaining. So if that's also a deterrent to someone, I can step aside too. But this is about all I can balance right now and do a decent job at all of it, including mothering.
No more than that.
Which is your prime.
You're doing a wonderful job.
Yeah, doing a good
job. And Dave, you, as secretary, that's a thankless job, so thank you for doing that. But I mean, are you okay to go ahead or?
Yeah.
How do you?
I've been doing it since my first meeting. And
it's fine. I don't mind being secretary.
Because John said in his letter he doesn't want to do any.
Yeah, John.
Do you want to be co-chair at all? A little bit?
Well, the Camp Bonneville thing, do you know the timeline on that? Because I put in for that
a long time ago. Notes. Yeah. So.
Okay. Because I'm curious how much time that's going to take, also.
Right.
So.
Two terms. Because change is good. It's why I step back, it's why Kelly stepped back and let it rotate through. Is that there's the oldster and then the newster, chair, co-chair, or co-chairs,
right.
That we mentor and encourage. So you'd be a year of training, your first year, and then you step forward and then you. And that's always been. I know I've done it in my neighborhood and in here too. I really appreciate that people take the time to sit in these chairs and it gives you a whole different vision. So don't hang back. Thinking, because if you think, oh, I'm not qualified, oh, Lord of mercy.
Yeah.
The best way of getting qualified
I don't think any of us.
Is stepping in. And as long as it brings a clearer new vision, I'm always here for backup. I've done my two terms in the chair and would go there if everybody fell down and do it again in a heartbeat, but I can show up even not being the chair. So my words of encouragement to you youngsters here that haven't sat in the chair.
Well, we know she's talking to Kevin. So.
Is that don't undervalue yourself because your vision and history brings a whole different direction that might guide us somewhere that we haven't been before. And, I think Jay feels the same way. He's paid his dues. He sat there for two terms and given a whole lot of extra time, especially with the work he's done on Harmony. So
I appreciate that. I think the leadership we have, though, is appropriate. I think the experience they have in leading and being involved with the board is much more valuable for their leadership skills and the way the board is going. So I appreciate that, but I'm
just saying.
Yeah. But if Jay and I are kicked off, you're going to have to step up, Kevin.
You may have to step up. So. But I one of the things I would encourage everybody to do is just like with Kevin and the Lewis and Clark Trail or Dave taking on the Camp Bonneville's, try to get involved in some of the lower items that we've got. And
I was interested in vulnerable thing too, but there was a lot of interest by the board.
Well, and that doesn't mean you can't get in there.
So I will continue to look for opportunities.
And as Barbara said, if anybody, I mean, if somebody, you know, right now I've got time, and I think, you know, we'll try to manage that. But I'm like Barbara, if somebody else wants to step up and take a shot, then, and we'll be fully supportive of that.
I'm just pleased that you threw your name back in the hat to continue on as our Parks and Rec board member.
Sure.
So really great value to us. And so thank you.
It's fun. It's fun. It's enjoyable.
Thank you.
The one thing that, I mean, look at what this PAC has done in comparison to some others, and then look at their leadership. And the reason I think that we've done a lot more is because we've rotated our leadership.
Sure.
The entire time of our existence. And I'll tell you, some of them are pretty stagnant. So we can't let that happen here.
Well, and I think, you know, I'll echo something Kelly said in one of his social media posts after the last meetings. He said, I just experienced a wonderful meeting with such spirited discussions. And that is one thing we've all not been afraid of, is discussing things that are out there.
Yeah.
So I would encourage everybody, just, you know, let's discuss it. Let's throw it out on the table. And haven't gotten through anything that we can't figure out and come to some kind of working relationship with. So.
Yeah, it's great when you guys, when we have that PBRS presentation, you guys pounce right on them.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Don't come in front of us unless you want to ask the questions, that's for sure. So.
What's the name of the DNR track? DNR parcel one?
Hey, is it parcel one, the DNR track, parcel one?
Parcel one.
Yes.
Right, that we're looking at.
That's what she said.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Unit one.
The 200-foot buffer.
And the trail.
Well, the trail, I mean, we're talking about the whole...
But she said the 200 buffer is already accounted for in the...
And the trail.
That's part of unit one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of unit one.
Yeah.
To expand to all of unit one.
Okay, so what we'll do is wait technically into our next meeting so that we can see if any of us pass the... I always like the Beatles song where it had, at the end of the song, Ringo goes, I hope we pass the audition. So anyway, not that we're like the Beatles, but I'm just saying.
Jamie, Dave, and I are the Beatles.
All right. So we'll wait till the next meeting. We'll do the nominations. I think we've got a clear idea of who wants to do what.
Yeah.
So. And if that changes, please, anybody say something. We'll get it squared away. All right. So from there, we'll go to the manager's report.
Got it. I'll try to be as brief as I can.
Something
so, PIP update. Steve, you and I presented the Planning Commission. We've actually talked about this, so I think we're good to go on that one. I just want to thank Barbara for coming in and providing public testimony. So, that was cool. It's great. So, thank you. Camp Bonneville Master Plan. We just had a work session just this last Wednesday with the council. So, Ahmad, Kevin, Tyler, and Jerry Barnett. I'm not sure if you know him or not. You may have seen him out at Camp Bonneville when we took our tour. He was kind of our tour guide, if you will.
Okay.
And anyways, he now works under Parks. So he is an engineer 3, and he's a project manager. And he's been in charge of the ordnance cleanup with the Army, so leading those contracts with the Army for almost about a decade or so. And so his work is kind of wrapping up out there as far as that. And so they're going to actually shift him and his responsibilities under Parks. And so he's going to actually be helping us on a regular basis from now on to do Parks projects. So like building parks, planning parks, that kind of thing. So working and doing RFPs and bringing contractors on board to help us. So... so Camp Bonneville Master Plan... basically, we met with the board and we talked to them. So the focus was to provide them with a background of Camp Bonneville, as well as, you know, current activities. And so primarily, it's been ordnance cleanup. That's what's been going on all these years. So now we're shifting towards master planning the site. And so, as you may recall, in our decision package spring of this year, we had $600,000 approved to engage in master planning. Out there, we know that that's not going to cover the whole cost. It's going to be a start, but We want to talk to the board about, we gave an overview of the 2005 reuse plan, the restrictions on the land as they currently are today. So we want to make sure that whatever we have in the master plan, that we take into consideration all restrictions on the land. So, you know, a restriction like you cannot have residential use out there. You can have hotels, you can have commercial use, no residential use. Just an example of several of different restrictions. We want to talk about public involvement. And so who's going to be on this planning commission, if you will? And that will be, and it came up within this PowerPoint presentation that we gave to the council. So it came up twice in here, the Parks Advisory Board and the Planning Commission. Both are public, two public entities that we can rely on, as well as a citizen advocacy with stakeholders. So we're actually asking the council to provide us guidance as to who they want to see on this planning board, if you will. So we got in a little bit of trouble here. We had kind of a framework of folks that were already kind of decided on that were going to be on this board, and then our council has dropped them. So now we're kind of reforming that again. And so as a result, there's a lot of questions floating around. Why did you drop this previous board? So that's being reformed. We're asking the council for recommendations as to how we move forward with that. We're also going to be looking at public-private relationships. I think the idea moving forward is that whatever we do out there shouldn't cost the county any extra money.
Yeah.
So let's try to do this through public-private relationships. So if we can get private either nonprofit or for-profit groups out there to put in infrastructure and maintain it, manage it, and even provide some revenue back to the county, that's great. That's what we're looking for. Okay. I did present on other funding options that were available. You know, if we want to put our thinking hats on and come up with ways to fund development and or maintenance. So an option that we threw out there was creating a park impact fee overlay that pertains to Camp Bonneville, you know, and how would we capture that? So it would have to be, we'd have to create a park impact fee zone over that entire area, and then the collection area would be all of Clark County, the unincorporated Clark County, rural Clark County, and so that would be used for development purposes and for matching grants. So we go after a series of grants also. There's a plethora of grants out there that are available. Another thought was, if we're going to maintain Camp Bonneville, should we take a hard look at expanding the Metropolitan Park District levy to include all of Clark County? That's a possibility. So that's something we should think about doing, possibly.
We should think about
just
doing
to get us
that
off
anyway,
general fund.
We?
What's that?
Shouldn't we think about doing that anyway? Because our development is pushing the border of the 5th district.
We're pushing the border, plus general fund is getting tighter and tighter. And so they're always continually trying to take it away from us. And so that would solve the issue, if you will. But it's going to require a vote of the public. And so I think it would probably be like a 2-year process. The first year we should probably do a poll and see if when those numbers come in at 65, 68, 70%, then we would exercise the levy, take it out, and see if we can get that passed. So probably not a very popular idea, because we're talking about increasing taxes or increasing fees. So that's something that the council is probably won't engage in in earnest. So when we start talking about the public-private relationships, that's when everybody kind of engaged and wanted to learn more about that. So bonding, we talked about bonding, but that gives us immediate debt service issues. Mm-hmm. And what do we bond against? So the only thing we've got that's guaranteed or semi-guaranteed is timber revenues that are coming in. And so we've been averaging about $700,000 a year, and timber revenues are probably going to be ongoing out there at Camp Bonneville basically forever, because by the time they get done going through a one sweep, 40 years will have passed and we can do it again. And so that's a possibility, but then again, that takes away any of our maintenance possibilities, you know, because right now we're using it for maintenance.
Relevant.
So that was kind of the gist of it. I wanted to give you this PowerPoint presentation so you can see what we talked about, and because you are going to be engaged in Camp Bonneville, I don't know to what extent yet. We'll have to find out. But I do know that we've got some representatives that have already accepted the task of being on the committee, if you will. So I want to definitely keep you engaged because this is going to be prominent for the next coming years. So as you may know. So the one thing I want to keep in mind is that we really need to know from the council which way they want to go, so we know how to scope this project. So if we want to go out and get a consultant that is excellent at public-private relationships and can really, you know, start engaging. And my hope is that whenever we do a master plan, by the time we're done with that master plan, we should be writing developer agreements, you know, to actually start that process of doing actual development on the site and not sitting on a master plan for years and let it become stagnant. So that's the hope. So just kind of like Heritage Farm, we're engaging with Heritage Farm master plan right now. It's a master plan. The master plan update. It's a small $10,000 contract. Hmm. Once we get done with that, we want to start doing what we're planning. You know, so we want to build a trail at Heritage Farm. Let's get going on it. So let's start funding it and get it going. So this will be the same, but on a much larger scale. So we've got shooting ranges that are pretty much going to go in no matter what. That's a given. That was in the original reuse plan of 2005. We know it's going to happen. The FBI is already out there. We need to move the sheriff's range. We need to move the public range. That's a given. And we'll probably do that probably before the master plan is actually completed. That's the idea. There's already 46 miles of trails out there. So passive recreation, such as hiking, biking, equestrian use, can actually occur at any time. The valley floor is already cleaned up. We can actually start letting people into that site and using it. So, what's that?
There were some camping sites there too, weren't there?
In the reuse plan, original reuse plan, it does show camping, yurts, all kinds of different types of camping. It shows archery ranges, it shows gun ranges, equestrian use. It's on, if you look on page
29.
No, I'm sorry, I'm going to just long, way long on my shift. Yeah, it's just right from there.
Seven,
there you go. And that is really small. We'll send you the electronic version so you can blow it up and see all the components that were actually originally planned back in 2005. So it's actually pretty expansive. So we've concluded that we've got about 2,000 acres to work with out there. So about half the site, right up front. We can expand to more if we need to. So.
So the, right now the slate's still really. We're not stuck to the previous use plan.
No. But the only thing that we're stuck to is any of the restrictions that govern the land.
Yeah.
You know, from
the accessibility, army. Safety issues.
Yeah. There's some things like, you know, there was talk about potentially selling some of that acreage out, you know, for real estate to afford, you know, can't do that. So we can't have residential out there, but we can have somebody come in and build a huge lodge, you know, to support a huge downhill mountain biking course, you know, yeah. Tournament level course or something like that. That's all that kind of stuff is very, very, very doable.
We had a PVP at one of our lakes in Kansas City, in Kansas City District, and it was a Rathlin Lodge. Mm-hmm. And they built this lodge, meeting center, restaurant, RV park, yurts, golf course. Discourse, on and on and on. It was state parks. It was a partnership with state parks. Right. The state parks went up with the PVP. It was incredibly successful.
What was the name of
that one? Rathbun Lake and Resort.
Rathbun Lake?
Rathbun,
R-E-T-H-B-U-N. Okay.
I forgot what lake it was, but it was in Kansas City District. I remember the lake. Rathbun Lake was Rathbun Lake, obviously.
Yeah, we got several examples in here.
I saw that, yeah. Toward the California land management, the Northwest land management.
That's already successful. What was it?
You should run out.
The ones that
moving on real quick. So Jerry Barnett will be joining us. And so with that, his first task is going to be helping me with Harmony Sports Complex, with the parking lot improvements and Section 30. We're going to be talking about that as well and how that whole relationship moves through. So what's interesting is that the Section 30, Harmony, and Camp Bonneville are all tied together. Because those shooting ranges are going out there to Camp Bonneville, so it keeps them engaged at all the different points. Just a reminder of the council work session on 12, Kirk Springs. So our piece of property down here, We are actively remodeling the house so it can be lived in. So we're going to have a volunteer park host at the site so that they can provide eyes and ears and keep the vandals away. So
are they paying rent?
No.
No.
Volunteer park host. So we'll have a whole long laundry list of duties for them in exchange. So just like all our other park hosts in our parks.
Where's the money coming for the renovation?
It came from PIF acquisition. So on the PIF cleanup, if you will. Is that right? PIF, or PIF development. PIF acquisition, I think. Level one cleanup. So then we had the development fees that we have $1 million for. Remember, we had these big ideas of turning this thing into a really cool destination. Yeah. That's from the sale of the Schaefer, RE Schaefer property.
Yeah.
We had $1 million to reuse as PIF. So I dedicated that to that site, but we're not going to use even a tenth of that. So so that's...
Is that the one that Mark Bolt said he'd love to live in the house?
Yeah.
Yes. Pretty much, yeah.
Is he living?
Is he
going to
be
retiring? He's applied, so I think we already have one in mind already. Who's the actual handyman? So
like, how much money are we spending on this? Just out of curiosity.
$48,000.
Oh, God. I don't like it.
Yeah. Anyways,
nothing. What would it cost to demo it?
What's that?
What would the cost be to demo it? 10 or 15?
Yeah, about 20.
Yeah,
about 20.
You got to look at the, I mean.
It's historical.
It's just going to keep, it's old, an old house, though. It's just going to keep needing maintenance, and it's just going to keep having issues. I mean, it's a 40 dump right now, but that's, I'm telling you, not the end of it, of a house that old.
So, anyway, so, yeah, there is a plan to tear down for the camp host pad there, you know, RV pad, and, but we have a house. So, we're going to maintain
it. Just a little bit.
That's all I had for notes.
Okay. Well, I want to do something.
All right. With that, I think that's about it.
I did see people walking around here this morning.
Did you?
Oh, yes.
They had a load pass. That's good.
Okay.
You want to talk about the waterfront park?
Not yet.
Or this, or
the map is. I just received it as we were going out the door, so we hadn't included it in your packet. So they just produced this map. It's beautiful and shows where the amenities down in the
park. Yeah. We've been down there a couple times. It's really nice.
I haven't been there yet. I'm so lame.
You need to go.
I'm going to go for my birthday next Friday.
Oh, yeah?
The restaurants, yeah.
Which one are you going to go to?
I think Twigs.
Twigs?
Yeah. Which one would you recommend?
I've been to Wildfin a couple of times, but I haven't been to Twigs. Oh. Wildfin is good. The food's good. Mm-hmm. My wife's been to Twigs, and she said she liked both of them.
Yeah.
So either one.
All right.
Both really expensive?
I heard Twigs was good. A little bit
expensive. Yeah. I mean, depending on what you get.
If you got the filet, it was like $40.
Yeah.
If you got a burger, it was burger prices.
Yeah.
I will say Wildfin's, their service is good, but it's, they're still making mistakes.
Is it minimum?
No. No, there's people that actually introduce
come
themselves and talk to you. And, you know, they know where your drinks are. They're not like, say minimum's like, I ordered a beer 20 minutes ago. Yeah, I know, I'm getting there.
Or anything like that. You're like, oh, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
They never come back.
You better be ready.
Yeah, you better be ready.
All right, all right. I think we're calling it. Unless anybody's got anything else to add?
Community Foundation, just a little... Community Foundation of Clark County, just wanted to thank us for establishing a fund for the Paleta Park Children's Garden, and this has been a $350 donation from Paleta Neighborhood Association and Lotta Allen. To fund that.
She's not here today, so... Is that going in?
Yeah.
They got it
now?
That's
the plan.
Nice.
It's going to go into the parking lot.
Okay. That's a wrap.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, no, thank you.
I have to keep
you all.
I have to kill time because my girls have been out sick. And I want to swing by their school and get their absent work, but it's going to be dismissal time, so it's going to be in the parking lot. So I'm like strategically trying to get there like at 3 o'clock so I don't get caught in chaos.
Well, being a mom, playing. You're doing a great job.
Oh, thanks. We haven't seen that. Thank you.
State park lands, yeah. Oh, wow. So it was quite a big deal here.
Oh, Jay, we have to talk about the Timber game.
Oh, yeah.
How insane that was.
That was one of the, well, it ranked right up there with the double post on,
oh, yeah,
against Kansas City in 15.
Yeah, I remember.
I mean, it was funny because I was watching it on TV, and the guy, I was listening to it on the radio, he was coming back, says, you know,
we're going to watch this game at this one place, and then, but they were closing, so I thought, okay, what are we doing? So anyway, they said, you know, it looks like the Timbers are playing for the last 10 minutes of the second. Looks like the Timbers are playing for the kicks.
Yeah.
And Seattle wants to score, so they can not go on the kicks.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of wacky, but.
Well, and then half our team thought they had just won.
Oh, yeah.
They thought aggregate goals and then overtime counted for away goals.
Well, the away goals.
They thought away goals counted.
That was bizarre, too.
Yeah, what a weird game.
It's like, okay, dude, you guys pay attention. Yeah, you guys, 30 minutes to go.
It was.
I just think it's constantly seated.